Hello.
Good evening.
Hey.
How are you?
Waiting for acknowledgement from Chris, but I saw him come online.
Yeah, I
I
saw
figured
that
I'd
too.
call you anyway.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah,
Yeah, I
thanks for
just need to.
finding that. I never thought it would be under. I never thought it. Like, I haven't entered it in the last 5 years, I think, and they're all
Yeah.
in there, yeah.
For as we were just
Because
chatting.
it doesn't show the indices. Like, if you open the first page of the comic book, you know how it has all the copyright stuff
Yeah.
in the lower corner on the back page, depending on the book. That's
Yeah.
usually how a comic base puts them in, exactly verbatim, whatever that title is.
Right.
And I think for 2000 AD, I couldn't find it.
No, I mean, I just as we were talking, I'm like, let me just search for just the number 2000. There can't be that many. And then it came up right away as the first thing. I'm like, okay. So how are you?
I am good.
Chocolate milkshake from my wife.
Oh, you got a chocolate shake? Is that what you needed a napkin for?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, because.
I saw you guys were eating at some restaurant.
Oh yeah,
Yeah.
we went out to eat. The kids picked that and then didn't eat anything.
What?
They had peanuts and then they didn't eat the food.
Oh, is it a peanut steak place or barbecue
Yeah,
place or oh,
it's
okay.
a yeah, it's a steak place. Yeah, and then they didn't eat their food and they wanted to know if they could have a snack. So we're like, no, you can't have a snack. Why not? You didn't eat anything. You had
Yeah.
peanuts.
It's all on you, buddy. Hey, Chris,
Exactly.
are you there?
Chris, are you there?
I see him. I
I
don't hear
know.
him.
Actually, I see his cat. He's
Uh-oh.
gone.
I noticed I upgraded Skype, okay? And there's this weird issue with oh, it's not even letting me call him. What's going on here? Skype crashed when he answered. I might
Oh.
have to call him back
Yeah.
first. Well, I'll try to add him to group. Let me see.
Okay. Either way.
I updated Skype and it almost wants you guys to update, like to the latest version.
I think
Oh,
he's
there
there.
you are.
Hello.
All right.
Well, mine auto updates, and I mean, because I haven't been recording anything. It just auto updates. I don't care. So whatever the new update is what I
Right, so we're in business.
I could hear you when it answered the first time, but it kept playing the connecting music and then it booted me.
Oh.
So I heard a snippet of conversation about children eating peanuts.
Yeah. Yeah, the kid. I posted on Facebook that we wanted to go to Anderson's, which Mike is just a local place that sells like hot dogs, hamburgers. They're known for their roast beef sandwiches.
And
And then they,
peanuts.
no, not this one.
Oh,
And then
okay.
ice cream. They do a whole ice cream thing. So Zach started having an absolute fit. Like he just woke up from a nap and he gets a little fussy when he first wakes up.
Yeah.
And so finally Stacy's like, well, what about the place with the peanuts? And then he said, yeah. So we went to the place with the peanuts, which is probably three times as much money to go out to eat than just the roast beef place. So we went out to eat, and the kids ordered chicken nuggets and broccoli, and they ate nothing but peanuts, which were free.
Was that the
Lesson
brew
learned,
pub?
sugar packets and peanuts next time.
Oh, God. And then I was telling Mike, Chris, that, and then the kids wanted to know halfway through their meal when they haven't touched anything if they could have a snack. Like,
Oh
no.
boy.
No, you can't have a snack. So anyhow.
Would the snack have been?
Well, they wanted to order dessert,
Like
whatever the
a
Mike
ice
pies.
cream or
Ice
something,
cream, probably.
probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Some sort of ice cream.
Jeepers.
That's like eating
Children.
at a convention with Chris Ivey. I've experienced it.
Really?
Yeah, we went to a steak place and he just ate the peanuts. That was
Made the
like,
peanuts.
you just ordered that steak. He didn't eat it. And I figured out why. He doesn't eat meat.
Right. Did you eat the broccoli or the potato?
I thought it was going to be a vegetable steak.
A vegan steak.
Whoa, it just started raining here.
No rain here
yet.
Looks
like we might get some.
They were saying it was supposed to rain all weekend, and they kind of changed the forecast. Which is good.
Yeah, it kept changing.
We went to a casino town last week, like on Thursday or Wednesday, and man, it snowed like crazy out there.
Snowed?
Yeah. It usually doesn't crazy. Snow after Mother's Day, and I was like, holy crap.
Yeah. Well, it's too late for snow.
Yeah. So, welcome to Geek Brunch Retro.
Yes, Geek Indeed. Brunch Retro by Geeks Weekly.
Yeah, starring Chris Ivey.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Rob Seeger. No, I Rob mean Seeger. Rob Krieger. See? Krieger.
I didn't get to see Chris at the Comic-Con last week.
I didn't go because I hate comics.
Aww. You're turning into comics. Knutson.
Comics suck.
See, that's what happens when you drink so much. You start to approve the alcohol more than the comics.
They do say it impairs your judgment.
Yeah.
Like I saw Bob Layton there. At first, I was a little worried because it was kind of I went on Friday
night
just to walk
around
for a second. And he was kind of dismissive. He was just staring at his phone, not really interacting with anyone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh boy, because I'm going to, you know, I'm like, well, I'm going to go on Saturday. I'm going to ask for commission. But, you know, now I'm kind of like almost like thrown off from even doing it.
Yeah.
But I came back on Saturday. It was like night and day.
He was
very, very, very nice. He was very congenial. It went to the panel. I mean, he is great at remembering people's names.
Yeah.
Have you ever met him?
Yes, I have, but I don't remember. I never got a commission or anything.
Yeah, so like he asked me, you know, my name and stuff when did the commission or whatever. And, I mean, and every time, like later in the day when I was at the panel, like he addressed me by name a couple times.
Wow.
I was walking around and he was walking back to his table, and he kind of patted me on the shoulder and again, you know, said my name. I'm like, oh my God, this guy really remembers names very, very well. Because you know how many people he meets at a con.
I'm really bad at names. Like
it was incredible.
Well, like even at work, like you step in a room and they introduce you to five people.
Mm-hmm.
And if I really don't concentrate and like repeat the name three times, I forget it.
Yeah.
But did he say Krieger or Krieger?
I didn't get into that.
That's the real question.
Yeah, that's true. But his panel was
Seeger.
Lighton.
Seeger Krieger.
I kept calling him Bob Dayton.
I like him. I like his work.
Bob Lighton.
It's beautiful.
He looks kind of mean.
Like, yeah.
If you compare him to Dan, I can see why he's kind of intimidating if he's on his phone. Because when he's stern, he looks like a Jim Shooter.
Yeah,
like Jim Shooter looks like he'll kick your ass. Like,
I think that was part of it. I think that was part of it. Like, is that I think just the way he looks, in combination of the fact that he was just staring down at his phone, it's like he didn't want to interact with. It just gave you that bad vibe. But, I mean, for all I know, like I said, it was Friday. He probably just sat down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I was just walking around just to get the layout to see where he was and stuff like that because I knew I was going to get a commission the following day.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, yeah, so, like I said, night and day. So I can't say enough good things about him after Saturday.
What did you get a commission of again?
Master Dark.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Do you mind telling me what a headshot like that runs?
Well, it was the whole figure.
Yeah.
It was 200.
Yeah.
See, which I didn't think was bad for him.
It's not bad, but I've totally gotten out of commissions just because of the freaking prices. Like,
yeah,
I used to go to a con and it was like, okay, 40 here, 60 here, and by the time I was done, I had like 6 commissions over the 3-day weekend.
And you probably and spent $200
on that. Now it's one. It's one commission. So I decide if I'm gonna do it or not, and it doesn't break my heart to not do it because I got plenty of them and they're not displayed. They're in portfolios.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of going in with the mentality this year I might not get one. I might just say I want Daredevil number one, and that's where all my money's going to. You
that's
know?
Pretty cool. So no Matt Kent commission?
I don't even know if he's there. I didn't check.
Oh,
I don't,
okay.
I'm a different con goer. About 3 years ago, I stopped looking at who's there. I mm-hmm. totally did. Because I'm just there for my friends. That's
mm-hmm.
I'm there less at the con than I am at other places, like bars and eateries and at the hotel and doing stuff with them. That
I only
concentrate, oh, is Daryl going to be there? Is Keith going to, you know, is Ivy going to be there? Is Bill going to be there? And then I kind of just spend time with them. And then everything else is just extra. Do you know what I mean? It's not part of the plan. That's just a bonus. Like, if I do get a commission and I see him, then, yeah. But the prices have gone so high that, like, I even my go-to people I'm contemplating not doing this year. Because I always usually get, like, a Drew Moss and a Andrew Peepoy for sure and a – Tom Scholey. Tom Scholey's gotten really costly ever since Transformers versus G.I. Joe came out.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, there's several others. And I just, like, there's some guys that, like, I never even heard of. And I go by there and I see, like, them drawing. And I'm like, hey, that's pretty awesome. And sometimes I'll get those commissions and they're, like, $40.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm concentrating more on that. Like, just finding somebody that doesn't have any work but can draw, and and then I have a friend of mine named Zach Bassett. He used to live in the Denver area. Well, I think he was Denver, but I pay him for full team commissions. Like, I don't know if you've seen my Batman and the Outsiders or mm-hmm. the Watchmen. I have the Watchmen with all the Charlton characters.
I haven't seen that, but I saw the Outsiders.
I'll take a picture of it, but it's got all of the well the way he did the and he does it. I like say have fun with it, and sometimes I'll bounce ideas. Like, I give him the Watchmen idea where I said I want like the Watchmen, and on one side I want the Charlton characters and their corresponding Watchmen characters in the same sort of poses.
Oh, uh-huh.
And then you can like split like a character in the middle and then draw half of him. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, sure.
So, like, if you had Rorschach, you'd have the Question or Blue.
I've seen those types of covers.
I gave him a general direction like that, and it came out really nice. And then he's done a Freedom Fighters, because I've always loved the Freedom Fighters. And
Mike, I'd love to see those.
The Outsiders, I'll post them. I'll go upstairs and go through them. The Batman and the Outsiders, he did, like, Batman, and Outsiders are in the cape. And it came out really awesome. So, he doesn't do them all the time, but he'll sometimes IM me, like, I'm in between jobs or whatever. Do you want me to draw something? I'm, hell yeah. Because imagine how much a team would cost you. Oh, my God.
Right.
And he knows that I've spent a lot. Like, when he was at the cons, I bought, like, I don't know, 6 comic covers from him, and he drew all those for me. So I'm like a huge fan of his, and I'd rather pay him than pay for all these other things. And the thing that worries me is, like, with Zach, I know I'm going to get something creative and something that I'm going to, like, love.
Mm-hmm.
With other people now, it seems like 4 years ago I'd always get something, and then it seems like sometimes they try to cram too much in at the convention. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they, if they have spots for 10 commissions, they'll say, well, I'll do 15 and I'll try to cram them all in. And it really impacts, I think, what they give you.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm still at the point where, I mean, unfortunately, just with our area and the fact that I haven't traveled a lot to go to cons. I haven't been to a lot of big cons. It's still special, to go to the panels and go see the people and stuff like that. It's not something you can do a whole lot around here.
Yeah. Well, maybe some year you could, when the kids get a little older, you can meet us all.
God, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That'd be good. Fun. Ivy liked it, right? You've been there twice. You've been to Baltimore and Heroes, right?
Baltimore once and then Heroes once, though, yeah.
Did you have a preference, Chris? Did you like them both the same? Or?
The cons themselves were fairly similar. The actual... They're kind of a similar size.
Mm-hmm.
I think I liked Baltimore, the location, better in Baltimore.
Yeah.
I'd agree because you got the boats and there's a lot of freaking things to do off the pier.
Yeah, there's like, a lot more make sure you within don't lose walking your distance.
Yeah, you don't lose your sunglasses in a speedboat.
Yeah, right.
Oh, no, not your real glasses. I have my real sunglasses.
Then you have to wear your sunglasses, yeah.
Yeah, I thought, well, I can make it the weekend with some sunglasses. And then I went to the con and I'm like, I can't see anything. I'll just pretend I'm cosplaying as the Terminator.
Exactly.
Just walk around and say, I'll be back.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I definitely, I think that if I had, I'd have to choose between those, of course. And assuming that, like, everyone was going to both of them, I probably would pick Baltimore. I like that setting. It's also slightly closer.
Mm-hmm.
It's slightly closer, but it's probably flights to Baltimore from here versus to Charlotte are probably like a third of the price.
Really?
If you fly Southwest, want to get away, it's only like $100 way.
That's a good thing to know. Although if I convinced if it was just me and my wife going and I convinced her to go, we probably end up driving because she will get on a plane when it's something like, okay, we're going to Disney World. But if she has a choice, she would not to go on a plane because there's some medication involved just to get onto it.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Not a big fan.
Well, we have some questions. I thought we'd open up with the questions. So,
cool.
We have one from Kyle Henry, and he addressed this to me, but everybody can answer it. He said it's not retro related, but he's just curious how many issues you average per day. I know you do trades in the lot, but just wondering, any self-imposed restrictions, rules, etc.? He said, I probably heard this before on DC Noise, but he just wants to wrap his head around what I read.
Well, how many you read a day?
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you. I average only about 3 during the work week, maybe 2 to 3, because I don't have any time to read. I work 10-hour days. I get home. I'm too tired. And then I wake up in the middle of the night, and that's when I read, like at 2 a.m. From 2 to 3, I read maybe 2 or 3 comics, depending on how tired I am. And then on the weekend, Saturday, is when I read the bulk. And I average about 40 to 50 a week. But
like, how many do you read on, like, a Saturday? Like, just,
Saturday like, is more average, like... Yeah. 35 to 40 depending on the week on Saturday, and then Sunday is maybe depending on how many podcasts I do. Like, this is my second podcast, only like 5 books on Sunday
today.
Yeah,
wow, that's a lot in one day.
Well, I know you read a lot.
Yeah, but
so
I
why don't I've you go you go next. Well, how much do you average a day?
I would say what I average
or week.
All right. So let's say per week then. Probably about 60 to 70 a week.
Wow, you do more than me. That's pretty impressive.
No, I can't
buy more than you. No, I think I buy more than you, but you read more than me.
Well, I mean, you obviously you buy way more than
well,
me.
Well, I have the library mentality, to keep current, you know? If I have the library mentality, I'll read it later. I'll buy it.
Yeah,
I'd say he doesn't keep current.
Like, everything is within 2 weeks of new stuff. Plus, then I always have a trade or a hardcover or something that I'm trying to read a couple issues of, you know, a day if I'm able to. Like, you know, like Infinity, how I just finished that up and stuff.
Yeah.
And now I'll be on to the Golden Age Volume 2 Batman.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very organized reader.
Yeah, he's... you read and you keep pretty much caught up in your wheelhouse. See, I'm like... I was like... I've kind of got lackadaisical now that I haven't been putting out DC weekly reads, but man, I've been not wanting to, like, I've been exploring other stuff. Like, I went down this war thing for Memorial Day, and I don't want to read anything. Like, I'm supposed to read Batman: The Long Halloween for Tuesday, and I'm going and kicking and screaming. I don't want to do it. I'm such a mood reader. I did not want to reread it. I want to read more Joe Kubert. You know,
But Mike, once you like get into the first story and you're onto the second issue, aren't you like back into it? Like, oh my god, this is awesome.
No, I don't work like you.
Oh my god, I don't understand.
I enjoy my books like 95% of my books because I'm a mood reader. Like, I read what I want when I want, and that's why I have the library mentality. And right now, I do not want to read Batman. I'm catching up on Daredevil. I'm reading Injustice. I want to read war books. And I'm like the kid. Like, I just want to kick in and screaming on my bed. Oh, I don't want to read this. And I'm even debating not showing up because I'm like, I don't want to do it.
Gosh.
So like, most of my podcasts are unstructured. Like, this one to me is unstructured. I can pick what I want, right?
Yeah.
Geek Brunch, me and Bill pick what we want. And we're usually in like 2 to 3 books. So even if he picks 2 things I don't want to read, it's not a big deal. But when you pick a whole trade, that's like 13 books. Well, I think Long Halloween's 13 issues, maybe 12. But I don't want to read it. Sorry. Chris, what do you average per week?
Well, I have those figures, as it turns out.
Oh, Chris, by the way, it's raining now.
I think it might have... It might still be. It's not raining as hard as it was when I commented on it earlier. I sent it your way.
What did you say?
The rain.
Oh.
No ice. No ice cream. So, Kyle, what year are you interested in? So far this year, I really fluctuate. So I started out this year for the first few months of the year. What the hell? Siri just started talking to me. For the first couple months of the year, I wasn't reading a lot of comics. But recently, I've been reading a lot more. So the last couple months, while I have been reading more like 20 or 30 comics a week, my average so far for 2017 is 11 comics per week. Pretty sad, I know.
That's not a lot of comics.
Well, you know, when I go on vacations, though, I read less. So, like for con week, I'll read, like, a couple of comics on the plane and then a couple of comics back, and then I, like, the whole weekend's other things. If I go on a little vacation with my mother-in-law and father-in-law, then I don't read that much. I read at night, like really late. So yeah. I can see I have weeks that, man, they're like I keep track of every single week. Like they're that's how I do Me Mike too. M's weekly reads. I do that podcast based on what I'm so behind in that podcast that I'm in October now. I'm barely entering November.
I like that you keep. I like that you keep chugging along and staying.
So
you know,
do I. Yeah. So do I. And the other thing that I like is how you often have like a topic like whatever you're thinking of at the time, like some sort of topic, you know, off the top. It's just always interesting to hear just like little things that. You might be on your mind at the time frame, you know, even before you get into
comics.
That's
what I try to do. The first thing is some weird topic. It could be something I was listening to a podcast and I just want to give my 2 cents. It could be something that I saw on Facebook. It could be an issue I read. Like if I was to do a Mike M's right now, I would be talking about Joe Kubert. I have fallen in love with these Joe Kubert presents. Oh my God. I am so vested in them. So yeah, that's what I do. But like I said, I'm real behind. But I do. It sounds like you do the same thing, Chris. Right? Like you like know exactly what your inventory is as far as what you read and.
Yep, I keep a Google Doc on my phone, mm-hmm. and every time I read a comic, I organize it by week.
Yeah.
And then anytime I read a comic, or I'll read a few comics, I'll put them all in at once or whatever. But I organize it by rate 5 stars, 4 stars, 3 stars.
So let me ask you guys both a question. As a person who reads all of his comic books in alphabetical order by week that they came out, so on and so forth, I don't keep track of any of that. What purpose are you guys keeping track of all of that information for?
Well, my podcast, for one thing. Plus,
that makes sense.
Plus, when you have a library mentality, you gotta know what you read and what you didn't. When you intake 250 comics a week, I mean, if you include the trades, I have to know what I've read. Not only do I have to know what I read, I have to remember if I liked it for my podcast. I have to remember what happened in it. So every time I read something, there's a one sentence little blurb of what I liked or disliked and what it was about. Mm-hmm. So that's how I keep track of it. I do the same thing Chris does, except I'm not sure you write like a one line sentence like I do. Or
no. And what about you, Chris? What is your purpose for doing that? Because you don't intake an overwhelming amount of comic books that can't keep track if you read them or not, right?
No, not really. But one advantage that's related to that is that sometimes I will I am kind of like Mike in that I mood read. So I might be working my way through a run and I just get distracted. I lose interest temporarily and I leave off. And I might actually go back the next year and want to pick up where I left off and I won't remember where. So I'll just go into my 2016 comic rankings and I just do a like find and replace search and mm-hmm. for the title, and I got the issue number where I left off.
Ah, okay.
And see, not only do I have that, but I have a little blurb of where it last ended. So like mm-hmm. I like know where that issue was, so I could just go look at that issue and say, oh yeah, okay, now I'm back into the storyline and go on.
Yeah. The other thing I do is, well, I started doing 2 years ago is that I made up 2 years ago, I made up a spreadsheet, and then I just copy and paste it for the next year in a new tab. And every few weeks or so, I'll just go in, and it only takes a couple minutes. I'll just input my numbers. So, for example, I can tell you that even though I'm only at 11 comics per week right now on average, I'll probably keep trending upward on that for a while. And like I did last year, I averaged 16 per week last year. Mm-hmm. But I am trending downward because in 2015 I averaged 26 per week.
I think 2 years ago I was doing 60 a week, and that just can't happen anymore. It just can't. Not
but yeah, if
I didn't podcast as much as I do, I have like four or five podcasts. If I didn't do them, then I could do the 60 to 70 comics a week.
Yeah.
But each one of my podcasts is 2 to 3 hours. Like
oh my goodness, do you hear that?
Yeah, was that something. Lightning?
No.
Wind? The wind shot?
I hear music.
It's a duck. It's an Easter duck that the kids got.
Yeah.
And I bumped into it. And it's making
singing?
And I don't know how to turn it off either, so I gotta wait for it to finish singing.
How did you hit a duck? Do you like have wireless too? Do you walk around?
No, I was just in my chair and I didn't know it was behind me.
You know how I podcast at least 80% of the time is I pace.
Yeah.
I walk around and pace. It helps me think.
How do I work this wireless thing? How do I just charge it and then it starts working? It didn't come with any instructions whatsoever.
Is it a USB wireless? Then you plug in the USB wireless. It comes with a little charger. You have to be charged.
Yes.
You like charge it up, 2 to 3 hours, and then you turn it on and it'll work wirelessly.
I'll try it next time.
Yeah.
So I'm only going to talk about my spreadsheets for a couple more minutes, but I want to talk about my spreadsheets real quick.
Go ahead.
So I break it down by publisher, by how many stars, and by decade. And it turns out I end up getting some really interesting information from that. Like, so for the last couple of years, like, didn't think that I was reading a lot of new comics. I thought that I read more old comics than new. But in 2015, 66% of the comics that I read were of this decade. And then last year, partially because I was really into Rebirth for a while, I think, a little more than 74% of the comics that I read were new comics.
Wow.
But I've really...
What do you consider an old comic, just out of curiosity? Is it less than 10 years, or is it...
Well,
is there
with
some
those
kind of rule?
With that number, I'm talking about 2010 or newer.
Okay, gotcha.
So the last...
Yeah,
last
I was just curious. Yeah.
Five, six, or whatever years at that time. This year so far... Comics published since 2010, 3%.
Holy moly.
You're kidding.
I'm not reading anything new. 40% of the comics that I've read so far this year are from the 1980s. But everything is pretty much, everything's like from the 1990s or older.
That's an interesting thing I might add to my statistics. I think that's interesting. But
yeah,
no interesting data. In other words, I bet you I'm very close. When I do a retro, I go onto this retro kick, so I might read a 12 old comics on average. When it's not a retro week, I don't read too many retro things. Unless there's an old Batman I need to read or something.
It's surprising, though, how little time it actually takes me. Like, once I actually set up the spreadsheet and set the so it automatically calculates the percentage and stuff, and I just have to stick the counts in real quick, how many total comics, how many of them were DC, how many of them were Marvel. It doesn't take much time at all, and it's kind of fun to know, but mostly just to look back on and see, you know, what were my trends, because I don't, you know, intentionally manipulate it. I just kind of read what I want to read. And like another thing that's interesting about this year is I'm pretty much just reading DC and Marvel stuff.
Yeah.
But
DC for me always is prevalent. Like every year DC outranks anything, like, by a landslide. And that's why I have so many Marvel comics I haven't read, but sometimes I go on, like, these Marvel kicks, like I am on right now. I'm trying to read, especially in the middle of the night, because I have the iPad. Because my process includes, organizing them when I get my box by publisher, and then alphabetically, and then scanning them into the database. And then once I've scanned them in the database, I look for the digital codes, and I add them in, and then I bag and board them. So that's... I am so stupid, though, because with the digital codes, I didn't always do that. And sometimes they'd expire because I had this library mentality. And
I won't peel the stickers off of them. Because
I cannot imagine how much I would have in my digital collection if I peeled the stickers.
I can't peel them. I'm like, I already have the copy of the book. I don't want to ruin, in quotes, ruin the copy of the book.
You're not going to ruin anything.
No, that is not near my condition anymore. Taking the sticker off.
Yeah, I mean, how are you, then, if you did how would you afford to put your kids through college, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Thank you. See? At least somebody understands. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, like, weird. I just can't do it.
Yeah, but you're a little more anal about grades than I am.
Yeah, but I've gotten better.
I know you have, but that mentality, it doesn't even in CGC, I don't think it affects the grade of your book.
I don't know. How can it not?
It doesn't, because it's not.
One includes the sticker, the other one's sticker's been peeled. So is it more rare to have one but it's different to have it with a sticker than without?
Why?
They should note that.
The sticker, well, I guess you could say it was like cutting out a coupon, but it's not. It's you're not losing a page. You're not losing.
No, you're not doing any damage.
You're not doing any damage. Well, you could potentially do damage if you don't peel it off right. But after a while, you get like this super knack for it.
I guess it's the same as more than anything, like comics that come in enclosed in a bag. Of course, you have to take it out of the bag to read it. So there's no.
I think your mentality will change as you get older. I really do.
Maybe.
Because you'll start thinking about, well, what am I gonna do with all this? And if I do I still want this issue? And if you have the digital copy, you're like, oh, that's cool.
Right. But to what you guys were saying with percentages of what you're reading. Like I said, I don't keep track of that stuff. But I will say, obviously, in the past year, two things happened that totally geared me towards DC. Obviously, the first one is Rebirth, right?
Yeah.
So that impacts my new reading. However, I've been like crazy into getting back issues of DC, primarily Flash, Detective, and Batman. And you know why?
Because of Gotham by Geeks.
Yes. You guys, I started listening. I'm like, what? Remember how great those stories were.
Yeah.
When you think about any of those Batman, I mean, I originally had, before I did a lot of back issue stuff, I just naturally had, like, for Batman, maybe, I think it was 360-ish and up. This is like around Nocturna and stuff like that. And, I'm like, and I seriously have never read those since they originally came out, and I read them as a little kid. Yeah. I'm like, I have to go back and read this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've just been trying to complete, like, fill in holes and gaps and stuff. And of course, the comic base is, you know, terrible for that too, because, like, you see, oh, I only need three more, and then I'll have this number and up or whatever, you know. So I've been doing a lot of that. But, yeah, it's been almost all DC. Very interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get to the second question, because we have two more to go. One of them is going to be easy. The other one might be a little thought that you Derek Coward, who sponsors this show, he hosts it, says, if the Pope was going to visit you for dinner, okay, this is the Pope. And
the Pope,
yeah, and a retro movie, what would you serve and what would you watch?
Hmm, that's interesting. What would I serve?
Yeah, like what? This is Geek Brunch Retro, so there's where the brunch comes in, right?
Sure. Yeah, I don't know what the Pope
are means. We having brunch then? Or is that the meal that we're going to eat?
Or is it dinner? Let's just say it could be anything. Dinner and a movie. How about that?
Well, the movie, that would obviously be The Exorcist, right?
Oh, my God.
Oh, I was going to suggest call up Bill Bomer and see Antichrist. I heard that that's a wonderful film.
Oh, man. He would never make it through it. Until, I mean, the payoff is in the last 5 minutes. That's such a pretentious film. Oh, my God.
I've never seen that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I could do that one with the Pope.
No?
Well, if you ever watch it and you want to watch it, it's on Netflix. You could watch like the first 10 minutes and then fast forward to the end, and then you kind of know what the whole movie's about.
I get that. Oh, yeah, I get that movie confused with Nymphomaniac.
No, you don't want
to. I think
to
that's by the same guy. That's not a good choice either. For
you know what I would love to do with the Pope. Now the Pope seems. We've talked about this now in other episodes, but we're not terribly religious people. But I would love to have the Pope seems like a really, really nice person.
And somebody that you could talk to, like, hey, I want to understand this. I know what comic I'd love to go over with him is The Phantom Stranger, with him being Judas and all the religious connotations.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. I would just like to break it down with the Pope and see.
See for me, I'm doing the opposite way, where I feel like, you know, he's involved in serious matters all the time, but he seems like a really down-to-earth, just easygoing guy. So I think I'd like to just go to have a real good burger place, have a couple burgers, and then sit down and watch Guardians of the Galaxy together and just laugh.
Oh yeah, that'd be a good time, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he had so much fun when Obama came to see him, and you saw how much fun that he had when Trump just recently came. Saw the look on his face there. So.
I think I want to go with your approach. Like I would like to get into discussion with him about religion, but he like you said, he has to deal with that stuff all the time.
That's his job.
So like if I got like a second dinner date with the Pope,
yeah,
then I would like maybe like to talk to him about Phantom Stranger and Lucifer and all these things that I have questions about. But I think I would go with a good Dion's pizza with green chili on it. Ooh. And if he likes pizza, well, he's Italian, right? So he should he's German.
Actually,
okay.
This yeah, he's I would German. Say this Pope isn't.
A but lot he's of in Italy. Italian. He's in Italy.
Hey, Mike, I think you got ghosts. I heard really faintly in the background.
Oh, that was Barb saying, you dumbass. Did you hear that? It was like in a demon voice, like in one of those movies.
Yeah.
Actually, Mike, you can tell her she's wrong. Anyway, he's not,
it's like,
he's
and then
not
her
German.
Her head spun around. Her head spun around three times.
He's not German? Isn't he
no,
from
he's,
America?
He's from Argentina.
Argentina, Barb. Way to go.
I think Barb's thinking of all the Nazis that went to Argentina after World War II.
But anyway, I think I would do Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh, that's a good one.
I would do that movie, and I'd go with green chili pizza. If you like green chili.
You'd be like, those aren't pillows, Francis.
Aren't pillows. All right, Chris, you're up. You would fart? Is that what you're saying?
Have a fart contest with the Pope. So you can rip one the
he probably would
loudest.
Be
oh, man, that's a tough question.
Oh, well, that's why they're paying us the big bucks.
Yeah.
I know. I would have mashed potatoes.
That's it.
So, one big pile of mashed potatoes.
Hey, you know what?
So you start on that side, and I'll start on this side. We'll meet in the middle, Francis.
I actually want to be in on this because I love mashed potatoes.
I know. That's one of the first things. That I think we talked about that on episode one of Retrocast.
I grew on
And if you get a big enough pile, you can sculpt it into double tower.
We could sculpt it till we see the Virgin Mary in it. Like one of those.
We are off the rails.
News, like one of the, well, you see those news items, like somebody sees like the Virgin Mary and their cappuccino, and then like all the old Italian ladies come to take pictures of it.
Yep. Yeah.
But yeah, it's funny. My favorite foods, I like mashed potatoes, I like hummus, I like guacamole, I like peanut butter. It's like I don't have to worry about
that. Would be a horrible like. This is the I have mashed potatoes and we have a side order of peanut butter.
What was
I think
that?
We just lost somebody.
It made a noise. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Well, that was weird. Did you hear that?
Oh, yeah, I sent you the picture.
Oh,
I got
the picture of the mashed potatoes.
No. Oh yeah, that one.
You saw that, right, Mike?
He's a happy guy. I saw so many different like photoshops of that picture.
Yes, with all the evil,
like the dude from the, like the little kid from The Omen, and
yes,
those are pretty funny. But yeah, no, I wasn't saying I would serve all those things together. I'm just saying, like, I don't need teeth, apparently.
But what would be the main dish? Like to drive the
mashed
potatoes.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Fish, some kind of fish. I'll do my bachelor dinner, which is like fish that you can like frozen fish you can put in the oven.
Yeah.
Some
fish sticks?
Like no, you know, like you get a just like you get a little package up freezer as a couple like breaded tilapias.
Yeah, yeah.
And then some like mashed potatoes that you make from the mix and a can of green beans.
So he might actually appreciate that more because you're actually making dinner. Instead of us we're taking him out.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean I'm not like, you know, I'm
Chris
not breaking
just
my
saying,
back.
Hey,
or anything.
Sit. Yeah, sit.
I know,
here.
But I think the Pope would probably.
I think he would appreciate
that
more.
Actually, yeah.
You made it.
But, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a simple dinner. You know, he likes the poor people.
Yeah. There you go.
And then. I don't know. I'd find some nice film about like abortion, how it's valid.
Oh my god!
how it's a valid right for women.
You just are looking for the most uncomfortable encounter.
Situation.
Do they have any movies about like contraception?
You watch Juno. Oh no!
Juno,
she has the no.
Yeah,
she has
no. She actually has the baby though.
Yeah, she'd like that. He'd like that. Yeah.
But it's a teenage pregnancy. I don't think he likes that. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Far be it from me. Like compared to other popes, I think Pope Francis is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But he's still a Catholic, and I have some serious issues with some of Catholic beliefs. But there are things I do appreciate about some of Catholicism. But I have a lot of problems with it.
So you would,
I'm
you
not.
Would,
I'm
you
not getting
want
into
to,
that.
You'd want wow, the Incredible Hulk's on El Rey.
In reality, I would not have the guts to if with the actual Pope, like maybe just like you know, like Father so and so from down the street, maybe. But I mean that's not my personality. Like I wouldn't do that. I mean I'd be uncomfortable. And when I, especially with the being the Pope, like, no,
if
I would not.
If I was offered I would the never opportunity, actually do that. I would do it. I would.
What? Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I think the guy's cool. Like, I would want to
no,
meet
no,
him.
No, 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 I'm saying I wouldn't actually, like, throw down and, like, try to make him uncomfortable with a movie about
okay.
a Pope.
Oh, yeah.
If I had the opportunity to meet Pope Francis, I'd meet Pope Francis, and I'd make him mashed potatoes. But, and fish sticks.
Tilapia, yeah.
I would actually probably find something that would be comfortable to watch, like a Secret Life of Pets or something. Let's watch something about doggies, Pope.
How can you go wrong with that?
And last question. This one I fall out of the category, but it's from Richard Sheldon. I believe he's one of the co-hosts on DCTV, which okay. I never listen to because I'm way behind, and I don't want to listen to a podcast about TV when I'm 2 years behind on every episode.
Right.
But yeah. I did get to meet him, and he says, I'd like to hear a discussion on 80s flick Explorers. And I don't even remember this movie. I know I watched it.
I don't know what the 80s flick Explorers?
Yeah.
Is that what he said? No, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, me neither.
I remember watching
guess
it,
gonna
but
have to
I
find
guess
a different podcast.
I guess it didn't make an impact on me for sure.
I just pulled it up, but no, I've never seen this.
It's from 1985. It's about
yeah,
a bunch
of young kids. Ethan Hawke and River Phoenix.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Surprised I haven't seen this. Oh, it's directed by Joe Dante.
Joe Dante, yeah.
I can talk about him.
There you go. Go ahead.
I can talk about other movies he did. Gremlins 2.
Did you mention Gremlins?
Gremlins, Return of Gizmo.
Oh, he did Interspace. Interspace. I didn't see that either.
He did The Burbs.
Oh, so I know
we
that
talked
one.
About the burps.
We talked about the burps
talked
on this
about
podcast.
The burps. I think I know. I've seen Piranha. I've seen Rock and Roll High School. I've seen no. Have I seen The Howling? I honestly, if he had asked about any of this, any other movie
you
that this guy made, but yeah, Explorers is the one that's kind of in the gap there. But I'd actually be kind of interested in seeing it. It's got River Phoenix in it.
Yeah, Ethan Hawke.
Other people.
Yeah. And other people are in there, too.
Amanda Peterson from Can't Buy Me Love.
Oh.
There you go.
See? How can you go wrong? Yeah. Well, I'm sorry we can't help him out.
Yeah,
yeah, well, we can't discuss it, but thanks for the recommendation.
Yeah, you have some interest there.
Yeah.
Thanks for the recommendation.
All right.
You know what? Hang on 1 second. I'm just going to go grab some water. You guys talk.
I thought you were going to say, I'm going to go watch Explorers.
Yeah,
I'll be right
yeah. Could you just, yeah, just hang on for a minute. I'll be back in an hour and 42 minutes. All right, hang on. You guys go ahead.
All right, do you have any more comments on Joe Dante?
No.
All right.
I might watch that movie, though.
You sound like you're a little bit interested based on the Joe Dante, right?
Yeah.
I saw this movie. I know I saw it back in the 80s on VHS, and I don't remember anything about it. So I was probably in – what year was it? Does it
1985.
Have a year? 1985. I was in high school.
I'm back.
And I probably didn't care about it. So I probably saw it on VHS in my junior year in high school. And not in that 1985. I added it later, like when the VHS came out.
Yeah.
So I don't remember anything about it. But let's get into our books because we've gone quite a while on our questions, and they were good questions. I could probably talk a whole episode about the Pope thing. Like, man, I have a lot of ideas, but I like religiously. Man,
what do you think the Pope's favorite comic book is? If he was a comic book fan,
I would love to. Well, if you had to pick a character that he would follow, I would say something of hope, and I would say somebody like Superman.
Yeah.
But not like Injustice Superman.
No.
It'd have to be like the Superman that the first thing that we think about when we think of Superman, right? That yep. Superman. Christopher Reeve Superman.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bronze Age Superman. Probably.
Okay, mm-hmm. So there's... Do you have any other superheroes you'd want to discuss with them?
Oh, for the Pope?
Yeah.
Daredevil.
Daredevil?
Well, he's a Catholic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
I mean, Daredevil is actually the first character that comes to mind when I think of Catholics.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
If you were to give me the Family Feud question, he'd be my number one answer.
Ding, 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 ding.
Show me Daredevil.
You know who else would show up? Nightcrawler.
Oh, right, yeah. Forgot. I always forget about him.
Oh, he's almost like a priest in some things, right? I mean.
Yep. Oh, yes.
I mean, they've kind of broken him down into like what traumatized him and losing his faith, but in instances, but he's usually a character of faith. So those are the two characters on the DC side. Catholics? Would you guys be able to name one?
DC side?
I would say Huntress was.
Was she? Yeah, I guess you're
but
right.
Not explored at all now, but when she was an Italian Catholic in Joey Calaveri's miniseries.
I can't think of any other ones.
The Spectre is, but he works for him. But I don't know if you could say that Corrigan necessarily is.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't think DC... I think they sort of avoid having their characters have an actual religion. Or maybe I'm just... can't think of any.
Well, the Ragman's Jewish.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's big in his culture.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that you're right. Most of them it doesn't really factor into their character as much as a lot of the Marvel characters.
I mean, they've explored it with Superman, like always going to talk to that priest and stuff, but they never really said what denomination he was or anything.
Right. Oh, well,
man, we could do a whole episode on that, but let's let's get to our reads this week. Who wants to go first? Who has to go to bed first?
I'm not gonna.
I don't have to work tomorrow, so that helps. I'll go first, just because.
Okay. Let me grab a pen so I can write down. All right, go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to talk about World's Finest Comics, number 193. The Breaking of Batman and Superman. It's got a pretty funny cover. Superman's in chains and Batman's chowing down at a little table.
I always to go to my database and see if I own it.
Yeah, I know. You can eat Batman now that you've agreed to defect from the U.S. and work for our country. Superman is a fool to hold out. With his superpowers gone, he'll starve. Batman finally cracked. Can't blame him. And I'll be next. So, I remember that this is a Bob Haney scripted story that doesn't have credits in the issue itself. But it,
Ross Andrew.
Oh, yeah, Ross Andrew.
Yeah.
That is correct. So it actually starts out with Batman and Superman are already captured by a Colonel Kozlov in a Middle Eastern country called Lubania. And Superman doesn't have his powers anymore. And he's actually being forced to hold a rock up by a rope. And if he lets it go, it's going to crush Batman, who's standing underneath it. So this is like this scenario that they've put them in just as a point of punishment. And hours upon hours go by, and eventually Superman can't hold on any longer. And after all that, it turns out that it doesn't fall on Batman after all. They just did it to screw with them. So later, they're eating crappy food, and then they're just basically trying to break them down. And then they get a break. They think, today we will have fun and games for our honored guests on the trampoline. So a little later, so Batman and Superman are jumping on the trampoline. Superman says, "Hey, this is fun. What a relief from Kozlov's other games." But then Batman says, "Well, why did he stick these feathered gizmos on us?" And they have, like, on their boots and shoulders and wrists, they have these little feathers. And it turns out that he has, like, a pet falcon. And those feathers that are on Batman and Superman are lures for the falcon. And so the falcon comes and starts attacking them. So Superman ends up diving into a nearby garbage can to get away from the Falcon and gets all covered in trash. But Batman starts at night. He's digging a tunnel for them to escape with, looks like a cup, like a steel cup or something. And Superman doesn't really know why he's bothering because it's taking too long. But they work on the tunnel over time, and then eventually Perry White actually shows up, and he's there just kind of as like trying to make diplomatic measures towards Superman and Batman being allowed out of this camp. But he's not really that successful. And time passes. They continue to work on the tunnel. And Superman says to Batman, you know where this tunnel is going to come out, right? He's like, yeah, we're almost there. And they end up digging out right up into the colonel's office. "You idiot, Batman, thousands of feet of barbed wire, and you zero in on Kozlov's office." But Batman says that it's actually his plan all along. He wants to get punished so that they end up on the trampoline again. So they're doing the trampoline again, and it turns out their plan is that they're going to jump real high and they're going to go flying over top of the barbed wire and escape that way. But as they're going to escape, the elastic net springs up and catches them and knocks them back into the prison. So Superman's pissed at Batman again. "Brilliant, Batman." And Batman says, "All right, Bright Brain, you think of something." So eventually, Superman all of a sudden gets his powers back. And so he goes running. He protects Batman from bullets as they're being fired on them. And he pushes his way through barbed wire, no problem. You know, Superman, he's got his powers back. And he runs the whole way to the border because, he wants to protect Batman from the bullets. And they meet up with Perry White. They're taken back to the United States. There's a parade for them returning. They get led into a United States Security Council meeting so they can be debriefed on their experiences in Lubania. And, it turns out that these two are actually fakes. Secret agents Steel Man and Cowl Mask, and they report back to Lubania. They're secret agents. The real Batman and Superman all this time have been held in this secret basement in the Lubanian camp. And the Superman and Batman that went back to the United States are secret spies. So the real Superman and Batman, they're still stuck in Lubania. They have to figure out a way to get out of there. And what they come up with is they get some paint. There's some prisoners that are painting camp walls. And, you know, they volunteer to do some of the painting. And they get some different paint. And that night, they use some of the paint and some clay that they've found. You know, Batman, he's a master of disguise. And he helps Superman out. And Batman and Superman, they switch costumes. And so that the reason that Superman doesn't have his powers is that they're continually training this kryptonite transmitter on him. But then once they've switched costumes and disguised themselves as each other, the transmitter is actually being trained on Bruce Wayne. And so Superman in the Batman costume gets his powers back, and they're able to escape from Rio and go back to the United States and confront the fake Batman Superman and... Because of all this, because of his failure, the story ends with Kozlov no longer a colonel, and he's being punished in the camp. He's painting Kozlov as a fool and a failure on the wall. So it was pretty funny. Pretty wild story. There's a backup story. I won't go through the actual details of it, but it's actually a reprint of a Golden Age Robin story. Originally it was in Star Spangled Comics issue 120 from 1951, but it's kind of a neat little Robin solo story where he is at a hotel and he ends up posing as a bellboy to get down, like get to the bottom of a mystery that's happening in the hotel, and he's like working by himself. It's kind of a neat little clue built into the story where they talk about some of the people that are staying at the hotel are Hindu, so they don't eat meat. And then they have one of the Hindu men eating some eggs. They don't really point it out, but then a couple pages later they ask you in the caption, "Did you notice the clue?" And it was kind of funny because at the time when I saw that, I was like, "Oh, that's weird." I just thought that they messed up. I was like, "Oh, that person." I did notice it, but I just thought it was a screw up. But I actually spotted the clue, and that was one of the things. At the end of the story, Batman shows up, and Batman and Robin discuss noticing that clue. But it was a neat little story. And that is World's Finest 193, entertaining little story.
Well, if I may, I'd like to go next because, as it turns out, I read a comic book that came out about 5 months after that. World's Finest Comics number 198.
Oh, wow, look at that.
Which I found was interesting before I even get into the story. I was not aware of this, and Mike or Chris, I don't know if you guys were, but starting with issue 198 and running for only up until maybe about issue 214, it was no longer a Superman and Batman title. It was more like when you think of DC Comics Presents, it was Superman and another hero. And I just assumed that all of World's Finest was always Batman and Superman.
Yeah, Because it went back to that afterwards, right?
Yeah, starting with 215, it was Batman and Superman again. But this one is 198 is Superman and Flash, and it's the third race between the two of them. And again, even when I bought it, I didn't think anything of it because Superman's or Batman's actually on the cover, like kind of cheering them on. But it actually made a point in the letters column. They changed the name of the letters column from, I think it was called the Cape and the Cowl or something like that, to just World's Finest Fan Mail, because it was no longer going to be Batman and Superman. As a matter of fact, you know, after the Flash issues, it was like Superman and Robin, Superman and Green Lantern. Batman did appear a couple times, but, you know, for one issue, that went back to another another hero. So I thought that was interesting. So I bought this one at the Comic-Con last week. It was a nice price and like a nice mid-grade comic. Probably about fine or fine plus. And I don't have any of the issues where Superman and any of the old classic ones, Superman and Flash racing. So I wanted to get this one and it wasn't expensive. So, right at the beginning, it starts with actually Jimmy Olsen waking up, in the middle of the night and he's got a headache. So he gets up to go get an aspirin and opens the bathroom door and just like starts falling and basically, and then like in blackness and landing on a chariot of a Roman in a race back from hundreds of years ago. So in the meantime, it cuts right to Superman, and Superman all of a sudden sees a disturbance because there is basically Jimmy and the Roman had kind of like switched spots. So Jimmy ended up landing on this chariot. The chariot then immediately disappears, and with the Roman and the horse in modern times, and Superman goes and kind of calms the Roman down, who can't understand what anyone's saying. Immediately following, one of the guardians on Oa calls Superman to go to Oa, and he brings the Roman with him. And what the guardians explain to him is that there are small, like, I don't even know what kind of creatures you would call them. They're almost like look like lightning, and they're called Anachronids. And they are life forms that move much faster than the speed of light, and that interferes with the orderly flow of time. And they say that normally there's just one here, one there, and it doesn't make any difference. But there's huge swarms of them, and it's really messing up the orderly flow of time, which is why Jimmy and this Roman swapped places. So the Guardian explains that the only thing to do is this has to be balanced by Flash and Superman, the only two superheroes fast enough to basically go in the same exact path that these Anachronids are going, but in the opposite direction. And of course, if you go in the opposite direction, it's going to nullify all of the problems that the Anachronids are in. Causing. So this becomes, you know, as they're basically saving the entire universe, they said, well, you know what, why not have this is a perfect opportunity to have another race. So they decide to have a race at the same time. The Guardians gave Flash a little like necklace, a green necklace to wear that forms something for him to run on out in outer space and allows him to breathe as well. In the meantime, Jimmy's in big trouble in Roman times because they think he's some sort of magician that just appeared, and they sentence him to execution. So that's just a quick couple panels before it goes back into the racing. And as they're racing around, of course, Flash and Superman encounter some problems. And like in one particular encounter, there's a bunch of asteroids, and Flash kind of gets knocked out for a second, and Superman has to rescue him. And then a little while later, they land on a planet whose sun is pulsating from red to yellow. So Superman suddenly has powers that doesn't have powers, and there's this huge, like, weird-looking creature with a lot of tentacles that Flash ends up having to save Superman from, and then they defeat the monster. And they get off-planet, and they continue their race. So at near the end of this particular story, they end up catching up with, as they're passing by in the opposite direction, a bunch of these Anachronids, and they end up slowing one down and stopping it, and it seems to be some sort of a robot. And as soon as it slows down, it totally disintegrates. And Superman theorizes that that it could only function and exist at light, plus light speed. And when it slowed down, it totally it just disintegrated. But that showed that it was designed by somebody. And now they have to try to figure out who actually designed these robots and what exactly is going on. The last page of the story, you see Jimmy Olsen being tied to a tree with about six archers, and the archers go ahead and release their arrows, and the arrows are coming right at Jimmy, and that's the end of the issue. And so as silly as this story is, and as much as I was enjoying it, I was disappointed because I didn't realize that it was going to continue into 199, which I do not own. So mm-hmm. I don't know who won this race, because right on the cover it says they're off, the third race between the world's fastest superheroes, and this time there must be a winner. So I still don't know who won this race. Now, I also should mention the creative team, which I sometimes forget to do, and that was Denny O'Neill was the writer and Dick Dillon was the artist. This was a lot of fun to read. I also had a backup story, an old story from 1952 with Johnny Quick. And
nice.
It was a cool story. It has this woman named Joni Swift, who ends up, as she's doing calculations at a university, accidentally, as she's saying out loud a lot of calculations, accidentally speaking Johnny Quick's formula. If you guys remember, he has that formula that he says.
Yeah, 3 times 2 by 54, whatever.
Exactly.
A bunch of mathematical equation.
Yeah, so that was part of, like, you know, it might have been the, like, part of it was the end of one formula and the other part was the beginning of another, and she said that loud.
Jesse Quick, too.
Yeah, and so this Joni, she becomes Joni Swift, and she wants to help out Johnny Quick. And, I mean, being that this was published in 1952, it's very, very heavy-handed in terms of that Johnny Quick does not want this woman helping out, that it seems like she's, you know, wants to be romantically involved and saying, oh my God, I don't want a woman, a girl partner. She's not going to know what she's doing. She's got to get back, you know, do her own stuff and really actually kind of sexist. But, it was a silly little 6-page story, but, it was enjoyable. And then at the end of it, The reason why she does great. There's like 3 or 4 different tasks that are set out to Johnny and Joan, and Joan ends up showing him off each time until the very, very end, because this particular professor that's been tasking them to do these things, he says there's only one thing left to do. There's one specimen missing. And he gives the apparently the Latin name for it. And so, you know, Johnny Quick's like, oh, my God, she's all over this. I'm not going to be able to get her to stop doing this. And so she starts looking around and she says, well, if it's because he said it's small, if it's small, it can't be very dangerous. And, oh, it was a mouse. He goes, eek, a mouse. And, of course, she jumps up on a table. Help, Johnny, don't let it near me. And she faints. As you know, I'm sure you know all women would do if they encountered a mouse. So you know, the professor says, tsk, she's fainted dead away. And Johnny Quick says, nature certainly is wonderful, professor. And
that's me with spiders.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
And then she says, oh, I don't remember the formula because it's worn off. So at super speed, he runs and he retypes the formula incorrectly. And so she starts reading it out loud and nothing's happening. So, of course, at this point, you know, he's got nothing to worry about. She can't become Joni Swift anymore. So they were both yes, exactly. They were both fun to read. I definitely would like to at some point get 199 and.
Well, come on over because I have 198 and you can let me read one.
No, you got 199.
I have 199.
Yeah, I got 198. There you go.
I have almost a full run of World's Finest from 199 all the way to the end. I'm missing three issues.
Oh, wow.
But,
that is one series I hardly got that.
198, but I have 199.
You see the cover for 199? It's a great cover for 198. I love it. It's a beautiful looking cover.
I like your cover better than the 199, to tell you the truth. The only thing thing I like about the 199 better, well, you kind of have that in 198, is when I think of Superman Flash races, I think of that Treasury sized one because that was the first one I owned, and I like the fact that that cover has like Batman, Robin on one side rooting for Superman, and then,
yes.
You know, I like that they grouped them up into different people rooting.
Yeah, agreed.
And on this one, you have Batman holding the finish line. I like that. But
this was a cool fight. I mean, it was great. There was this one particular vendor at the con that had a lot of these types of books out there, where they're not all near mint and hundreds of dollars, but rather, you know, a nice mid, not like really bad grades, but just mid grade books that were very affordable.
Oh my God. There's
20
the one that,
and $50 range.
Yeah. There's the one guy that me and Chris buy books from, and he's no longer doing anything but CGC book. But before that he had these things called like $10, $20, $50. And you would find all these gems in those books, you know.
It was
based
really
on,
nice because I got
condition, yeah.
Yeah, I got to get a cut like this one, and I got
Tomorrow's Treasures. I think is the guy that I like to go.
Yeah, that would be Mr. Campbell, not Moa.
That's right, Chris Campbell.
Chris Campbell.
Moa, that's French for me.
Yeah. I took French. That was fun. That's one word I remember. Moa.
No, I didn't take any French.
Moi and foutois.
What does that mean?
Fuck you.
Oh.
I'm sitting on a foutoir right now. Oh, no, I'm futon. Sorry,
futon,
I got that.
Yeah.
So it's funny that we both picked a World's Finest. Remember, Mike, when me and you did one at the beginning of the month, we had like all Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh yeah, that was because of the movie, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, too. At least there was a little bit of a reason, but you guys did do a good job of creating a theme.
Yeah, without
that episode.
Well,
let's hear your World's Finest one, Mike.
This episode, I didn't channel in on you guys.
Okay,
I channeled in on the holiday that's tomorrow, Memorial Day. So I read war stories, and one of them, well, all of them, I think I have never read. I've never read any of these. I've read a lot of Haunted Tank, but I have not read the first appearance of the Haunted Tank. And the Haunted Tank was written by Rob Kanigher with Russ Heath artwork. It was G.I. Combat number 87, published in 1961. And it features the M3 tank, which was associated with Robert E. Lee. And if the turret was created by the British. They had an American one, which they called the Lee, and for some reason the British one was called the Grant. So the engine and stuff were the same, but the turret was called something different, the nickname. And then they had bigger tanks. This was the medium one, and the bigger tank, I think they still had it classified as an M3, and there were I can't remember the name of the other tank, but they were in the smaller version of the tank, and they open up as with the Tiger tank firing at them, and it knocks them off a cliff. And these Tiger tanks are very heavily armored. Like there was a movie that just came out recently about tank warfare. I can't remember what it was,
Which number
Do
is this,
Do you remember
Mike?
what that was called? Fury. Okay, there's a movie called Fury that talks about World War II tank warfare.
What number was it, Mike?
Number GI Combat 80. Let me get 87. Yeah.
Okay, got it. Thanks.
Which is an affordable comic book, by the way. So
I can see that.
I may be hunting this guy down, mm-hmm. because it is a big deal to me. Because
that's a great cover too.
Yeah. So anyway, these guys were fighting a tiger and that knocked him into the ravine. All passed out. The entire crew is passed out. And guess what? The ghost of Robert E. Lee, or Robert, sorry, the Jeb Stuart, General Jeb Stuart, takes over the tank while they're passed out and fires upward as the tiger was looking over them to see if they were destroyed, and destroys the tank. So they wake up and they're like, what the hell happened? The tank is destroyed. And we're alive. And the one guy at suspects, his name is Jeb Stuart. He's named after his namesake. And he's like, I think I keep hearing this voice and it's laughter and stuff, but nobody, I don't think any of my other crew believe it. And his crew, he grew up with in childhood. In other words, they joined the army at the same time. And then got the same assignments. They were like, we want to drive a tank. And they got it. So they got this M3 tank. And that led them to this other town, a battle-ridden town, where our allies were marching in their infantry. And they were waiting for tank support. So their little small M3 tank shows up. And they're like, oh, my God. We have this little weak tank that's going to defend us. They were making jokes. And then all these big tanks show up and they start laughing at them like these guys are like mice. They're what are they gonna do? You know, and then the U.S. guys are waving at them and poking fun of them, and they all go front and they say, you can ride in the back, we don't need you, you're not gonna be able to fight a tiger tank. Well, what happens is the tigers ambush them and destroy every single U.S. tank except for their tank, which is the Haunted Tank. And man, did they use like wicked strategy to destroy all the tiger tanks in this town and kind of like save that infantry group before they got there. So it was really a spectacular story, and it gives their origin story as kids. They used to always play the North versus the South back in the day with their friends, and that's, they even joined the army, and they named the, they knew what the tank was named after Lee, and they called theirs the, you know, after their namesake. And they did even have some cool scenes with air support where they had to get on the top of the tank and use the machine gun to shoot down aircraft. But they actually took down like four Tigers, which is a big deal. And they did it through maneuvering, because they knew tigers were well armored and they had to shoot at them at angles. So they either shot up or shot down, and they crashed like through walls. They made two tigers shoot at themselves because they were like lining up to shoot at the Haunted Tank, and they like crashed into the wall, and both German tanks fired at each other and destroyed each other. So yeah, that was a lot of fighting action. I really liked it. Plus it shows the bonds of four guys that grew up together, and they love each other like brothers, and they're all in the same tank. They're all fighting.
I really like those old war comics, whether it's GI Combat or Sergeant Rock. I just really enjoyed those.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I read this as a showcase. I don't own the book, but I wish I did. And I see that it's affordable. So hey, if it shows up, I'm gonna buy it.
Yeah, that's cool. All
right.
Sweet. comic books. Let's see. Weird War Tales. Oh, all look right. at that. Following
you did a Weird War Tales?
Yeah, issue 93. You know what that one is?
No, I don't.
First appearance of the Creature Commandos.
Oh, yeah.
Introducing World War II's weirdest warriors, the Creature Commandos. The Joe Kubert cover. And there's
talk
actually...
Talk about affordable. That one's affordable, too.
Yeah, this... this has actually several stories in it, but the first one is The Creature Commandos. It was written by J.M. DeMatteis with art by Pat Broderick and John Slardo. Don't know who that guy is.
No.
But, so yeah, it's Project M. Secret project of the U.S. Army in 1942. Lieutenant Matthew Shreve is presenting to a bunch of other white guys, and they so he's showing them this new project that they're doing, and he's talking about these new soldiers. He's showing them a film that is going over the different research subjects. They have Warren Griffith. He's a guy from Oklahoma, a farm boy that has lycanthropy. And he thinks himself a wolf, so they medically managed it so it would manifest itself in him. And then you have Sergeant Vincent Velcro. And he joined Project M to avoid a 30-year sentence. And over a six-month period, they injected him with various experimental chemicals and blood extracted from the New Mexican vampire bat. And then finally, Lucky Taylor, a Marine who stepped on a landmine, and surgeons worked for weeks putting him back together again, albeit not as he was originally constructed. So the guys that he's presenting to, they're a little taken back. Actually, they're yelling at Shreve, "What is this nonsense? How dare you call us together for this idiocy?" And then as he tells them to calm down, the Creature Commandos come busting through the wall, particularly led by Lucky Taylor, who's basically the Frankenstein. The Army brass, they're still not quite convinced. You know, they think that it's just some kind of Hollywood costumes and stuff. But when Velcro actually attacks one of the Army guys, it seems like he's actually going to suck his blood. Shreve sends the Velcro or Griffith after him, the werewolf, to stop him from doing that. And you know, things get a little crazy for a little while, but then they get them under control again. One of the guys, it seems like he's like the head honcho. You know, he says to Lieutenant Shreve, "These guys, these commandos are a menace. They're terrifying. They're inhuman dregs. I hope I never see him again." And Shreve starts to protest, but he says, "Don't interrupt me, son." And basically says, "I said I never want to see him again, but that doesn't mean that we can't use him." So the commandos go out on their first mission. They go after Castle Conquest. It's an old French stronghold that the Germans have taken over, and that they're actually conducting experiments there. So they parachute in. And we get to see the usefulness of the creature commandos and their special abilities. You know, Velcro can turn into a bat and swoop down behind some German soldiers on the, you know, up on the ramparts or whatever you call it of the castle. He's able, he can attack them and take them out and get his meal while Griffiths is sneaking up the wall and with his you know, werewolf powers and throwing him over the side. They kind of a weird moment there. So they fight their way into the castle. They come across like a ton of German soldiers and start pushing their way through and finally break through this big steel door that the soldiers are guarding. And they come across President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Mm. But like, it's just a small little panel, and where they find the what seems to be the president. In the very next panel, Lieutenant Shreve just opens fire because he knows that it's a fake. So it's kind of a funny moment, but it actually ties into something, because what it turns out to be is that the experiments that were going on in the Nazis in this castle is that they were actually making fakes of not just Roosevelt, but Eisenhower, Stalin, Churchill. They're making a whole bunch of androids to try to put them into the, you know, send them out and actually cause havoc with imitators. So they start destroying everything, and they have to fight their way back out. And it ends a little, it's pretty straightforward. Like, once you get the concept of the creature commandos and you find out the mission that they were, or what the Nazis were up to in this castle, the end of the story is just them kind of getting it out, and Velcro's kind of pissed at, it almost has like a bit of a Suicide Squad vibe to it. Velcro's kind of pissed at the lieutenant, because he's acknowledging that that they're, even though they're monsters, they're kind of treating them like their lives are expendable. And Velcro says that the lieutenant is the one that has the monstrous spirit. So it's almost kind of like a Suicide Squad, Amanda Waller kind of vibe going on there that I got, but... So that's kind of neat. That's like the most interesting story. There's another one called Rising Sun, written by Mike W. Barr, with art by Nali Zamora. This is a pretty weird story. It was it takes place in a Japanese internment camp in the States. You know, like they unfortunately created those during the war, and a lot of Japanese American citizens, including I believe George Takei when he was young, yeah, his family.
It's crazy when you think about that.
Yeah. So that's not, I mean, the part that's kind of weird is just it's about this. So it takes place in there, and the American soldiers are not treating the prisoners very well. And there's a father and a son that are in there, and the father's name is Masao Tabushi, or that's actually the son. And his father, he prays every day for Japan. It's, you know, doesn't he know he could get in trouble for doing that? And you know, his son says he doesn't care, even though he hates Emperor Tojo and the war. He's not supporting that. He still loves Japan. And but his father ends up getting taken into custody, and and being questioned, and he ends up getting killed during questioning. So the son buries his father, and his son ends up actually being framed for another crime. Things escalate, go from bad to worse, but just when it seems like... So it turns out that the crime that the son is accused of, he was framed by one of the American guards. And just then it seems like he's going to get away with it and he's going to shoot. A sun rises in the sky from the opposite side of what it normally would. It rises in the west from the direction of Japan, and it's depicted as like the rising sun from the Japanese flag, and it's got the father's face in it. And it basically fries the guilty soldier. So it like fries him right down to the bones. Oh. It's just really bizarre. It took a really strange twist. I mean, I guess that's why it's in Weird War Tales, you know.
Yeah.
Like up until that point, it's pretty straightforward. And then the final story is called "Life Hangs by a Thread" by Carl Wessler and Vicente Alcazar. And this is just a strange story about Air Force pilots and Lucky Charms. Basically, there's a guy who gets a package with his lucky teddy bear. And he's like, I'm not going to carry that stupid teddy bear. And even though some of the guys are making fun of him, one of the guys says, hey, you better take it with you. Anything that is lucky, you need to take it with you. So-and-so here, he's got his lucky dice, and this guy, he's got a little like skull head, and he takes it up with him every time he flies. So they convince him, like, okay, I'll take the teddy bear up with me when I go. He tries again later. He's like, I'm not gonna take it with me, or because the teddy bear gets like ripped up. He's like, I'll just leave it, you know. The nurse is going to sew it up for me. I'll just leave it. I'll just go up without it. And the guy that was telling him in the first place, you know, you should take these with you. You should always take your lucky charm with you. He actually goes as far as, like, punches him in the face and, like, knocks him out. Try to keep him from going up without his...
He feels very strongly about this.
Yeah. And what ends up happening on the next mission that they're on... you think, oh, he's going up without his teddy bear. Something's bad's going to happen. What actually happens is the guy who has the little skull as his lucky charm, he gets shot out of the sky. And so the main character is thinking, as he's like returning back to base, he's thinking, you know, superstitions, blah blah blah, like I'm heading home without my stupid teddy bear. And Chuck, the other guy, he's gone and he had his, and then all of a sudden he notices hanging behind him inside his cockpit is the guy's lucky skull. So the guy died because he gave his skull to the guy because he didn't have his teddy bear.
That's actually a pretty cool story.
Yeah,
that's a neat little story. But so, it was, you know, 25 pages and a bunch of different little stories. But, you know, the main draw being the creature commandees.
Yeah.
Very cool. Do you own that book? Or is this read digitally or something?
No, I got this one. I found it for $3.
That's good.
Got a nice buy on it. I mean, it's not near mint, obviously, but it's a pretty good shape, man.
I own a lot of their appearances, but not their first, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Ah-ha-ha-ha.
Defeated.
I put my puny collection up against yours.
Yeah, I don't own any of those books that you talked about, both of you, so far. Even World's Finest 193.
you're going to have to get out and you're going to have to place an order soon.
Maybe. This weird World War one's very interesting to me.
Yeah.
For the Creature Commandos.
I think you've talked about some Creature Commando stories in the past.
Yeah, I have. I actually own this book, but not in a single issue. There was a collected edition of the Creature Commandos, and it has that book.
Very cool.
Yeah, this is the only one I have. Just happened to cross it, right place at the right time.
I like the Weird War back. I mean, a lot of the war comics that have backups, there's a lot of gems in there too. At least stories that I like. I actually think that some of them are based on stuff too, like loosely based on things.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I'm sure. That's cool.
So, Rob?
Well, you know what? I'm going to just talk generally about. I finished reading the 53 issue run of Infinity Inc., as well as the annuals. There's only two annuals, a special edition, as well as some tie-ins that, like, if it, the first part might have been in a New Teen Titans or Outsiders or whatever. And specifically just the ones that I read towards the end of last week. Basically, around issue 47 through the end at 53, I felt like overall, and I did break up my reading on this into like almost like three parts. I read like the first 18 issues, then I read a bunch of other things, and I went back to it and read another whatever 15, 16, 17 issues and read some other stuff, and then I finished up. But I really feel like from the point where Crisis kind of ended, which was in the mid-20s, it just started getting more and more interesting. I'm not sure exactly why. I think that maybe probably the core characters were at that point a little bit developed. Also, it wasn't such a large cast because the Justice Society was out of the picture at this point. Whereas prior to Crisis, even though it was starring these Infinity Inc. characters, several of the Justice Society members would appear almost every single issue. So it's quite a large cast, a lot of stuff going on. But as it started to run into the late 30s, we got into the Millennium crossovers. And I actually totally forgot about that miniseries, that kind of event. And I didn't reread the event, but just those tie-ins were pretty interesting. And that was when I think it was a lot of... Dark Side, if I'm not mistaken. Mike, do you remember anything about that?
About the Millennium? Yeah. Chris covered a lot of it.
I'm sure you remember.
And it had to do with the Manhunters, and they took
the Manhunters.
Yeah, they took a lot of the key characters and made them Manhunters, like Wally West's father, and I think Commissioner Gordon was even a Manhunter.
Oh yeah, how could I?
Yeah.
Yeah, how could I forget that? Because it, actually,
it spawned off the new series called the New Guardians, which.
Oh right, yeah.
Yeah. It also it had that racist guy in there too. There was a South African guy that was like a racist that was on the early issues of that.
Well, who was that Godfrey guy? What was he? Wasn't related at all to
the Godfrey was the Legends.
Yeah, that was Legends.
Oh, Legends.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting mixed up because they did talk about that in some of the issues as well.
This had to do with the Guardians and the Zamorians going off to breed and stuff and have babies.
Yeah, you know, I'm getting mixed up. with the Millennium one because Obsidian was dating this girl that was he and Northwind had gone on a double date issues and issues ago, and then Northwind was out of the picture, and this particular woman started dating Obsidian, and like I said, I'm like, sort of like what you guys were talking about. This was like a couple of years, you know, earlier into the run, near the beginning of the run, and then they said that she was a Manhunter, and she became she took over as the Harlequin, which is not Harley Quinn, but took over from the Golden Age Harlequin, who ended up marrying Alan Scott, the original Green Lantern.
The original one, I think, was she was a villain.
Yeah, she was a villain, and then she reformed here in the, well, she was, I mean, she's old at this point in Infinity Inc., and she confessed that she always was in love with Alan Scott, and that's why she was bothering him all the time.
Yeah.
And they ended up getting married. I don't remember what issue it was here in Infinity Inc., but they ended up getting married. And in Millennium, in issue number 47 of Infinity Inc., it was revealed that that she was also on this, not her, but this girl that was dating Obsidian was actually a Manhunter as well. And what I really liked about towards the end of this run is earlier on, we talked about Helix, I think, one time before, and Mr. Bones was the leader of Helix. And so when they ended up being caught, basically the courts agreed that they had been treated and grown up in a terrible situation. And they felt that Mr. Bones, as the leader of the group, they all considered themselves siblings, that he had too much influence over them, and that they would all go to like a, you know, kind of a, like a therapy hospital or whatever, and get themselves settled. And Mr. Bones was placed in the custody of Infinity Inc. And from that point on, even though he wasn't a member of Infinity Inc., he went along with them on all of their adventures. And out of all the characters, he really had, from his first appearance all the way through, some really, really great character development. You just saw him being, you know, at first just kind of being a bad guy, but, you know, not 100% to, you see him shift more and more in tone that he's actually like developing friendships with a lot of these characters in Infinity Inc. It was really interesting to see. And I guess, I don't know, have you guys both read this Infinity Inc. run or no?
I have, but it's not fresh in my mind.
I
read the entire thing, except for two issues. But
I'm going to do a little bit of spoiling, but of course, you know, this, I mean, you're talking, these are 30 years old at this point.
Yeah.
So, so anyhow, when it got to issue 50, it was a big double-sized issue where it had the Jack Kirby Sandman. He was actually ended up being, at this point, he was actually Hector Hall, who had been the Silver Scarab. And he had been dating and engaged to Fury, who was Lita Trevor. And they ended up on the next issue finally getting married in issue 51. Well, at the same time, this Harlequin came back after being defeated a few issues before and ended up using her illusion powers to convince Solomon Grundy that she was really Jade, because Solomon Grundy at this point would listen to anything that Jade, like, he didn't like anyone, but he loved, he basically, he was like Jade's pet, basically. He would do anything that Jade told him to do.
Well, this had Michael Bear's artwork. He's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man, and, he drew the Hellstrom stuff, like, for Marvel, the Son of Satan.
Oh, that's right, I forgot.
In the 90s, yeah. This guy had a really fine, detailed line. He
yes,
good.
It was There's a lot of good. He did a great job towards the end of this run. He became
the
right.
He was best. Great.
Well, in this one, as these two, as Fury and Silver Scarab get married, basically Harlequin acts like she's Jade and convinces Solomon Grundy to start beating the crap out of Skyman, who had been Star Spangled Kid. And Mr. Bones is there at the same time, and so he tries stopping what's going on, but they end up grabbing Mr. Bones and getting his glove off and have him touch Skyman, which, if anyone's not familiar, Mr. Bones has cyanide skin, so if any of his skin touches, he's actually got invisible skin. So that's why he looks like Bones. It's just
I
the
actually
skeleton,
like
you can
that
actually...
team. That the villain team is awesome.
Helix, yeah. And it actually was revealed then later that Mr. Bones is actually black too. He's a black man. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, so he's unconscious. He's basically unknowingly forced to kill Skyman, who is Star Spangled Kid. So this was a very dramatic moment here, which. You know, I'm actually doing, every once in a while we do a podcast about the 90s Starman run, Jack Knight. And so a lot of this stuff is actually referenced with Jade being in control of Solomon Grundy, fact that Solomon Grundy killed Star Spangled Kid.
That was actually established pretty early in the series, right?
Yeah,
it's like early single issues or something like that.
Yeah, so that was really interesting to go back and read when it actually happened. Even though I've read some of these later issues when they originally came out, I didn't really remember. So it was quite interesting, and just the fact that it, you know, it wrapped up just a few issues later with Helix basically under control of their old creator, who was named Dr. Love, and they end up getting away from him, but. They feel like Mr. Bones really doesn't fit with them anymore because he's been with Infinity Inc. for so long. So they kind of go off by themselves, and Mr. Bones is kind of going to stick with Infinity. But then the series ends with issue number 53. And what I didn't realize until I read the letters column is that Roy Thomas was in the process of creating a Helix series. And I'm like, did I actually totally miss this? And I looked it up, and it doesn't exist. So something happened. Yeah, they never ended up doing it. But it was definitely, it wasn't bad at the beginning by any stretch. But the first 10 issues was one long arc, and it incorporated practically all of the Justice Society as well as all of these members of Infinity. Which at that point would be brand new to readers. I thought it was a little bit plotting at times, but then it just picked up more and more as it went on. And I really feel like the last 15 issues or so were actually the strongest. It's too bad
love the cover to 53 because it pays homage to a lot of Golden Age villains. Like it's got the dummy on it, a female gambler. Harlequin, Icicle, Solomon Grundy. Who's the girl in the purple and white? I don't recognize her.
That is... what is she called? I want to say, was it the new hunt? Not because it wasn't the other Huntress. I want to say it was the villain Huntress.
Tigress,
thank you. Yes.
They really jacked up her costume, though. The other ones are identifiable. Yeah. Tigress always had the leopard-like look to her.
Yes, that's who it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what you're looking at
I would have never guessed that.
Yeah, the original dummy from the 40s with new villains, obviously except for Solomon Grundy.
Right.
You know, taking over the old villain roles. Mm-hmm. It was very good. It was really, really, I felt like it was getting stronger and stronger when it was at the end. But, you know, 53 issues even back then was a decent run.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that I read it. And you know what? Now I'm looking at the cover, and it never even occurred to me. But, Mike, if you're looking at that last issue, look at the title. I mean, they're just the name of the book. It says Infinity Inc., but you see, just in a different color, it says Finny.
Oh, Finny. Yeah, I didn't notice
so,
that.
You know, like end.
Yeah, like what, the end.
What language
yeah.
that is.
That's pretty.
That's clever.
That yeah. is clever.
I just noticed it now since you were pointing out the cover. I pulled it back up to look at.
Yeah, and that's a Michael Baer cover too. It's awesome. Yeah. Like he, yeah. This artist came out of nowhere, but like when he drew this in Hellstrom, I was like, oh my god, I loved his art.
And you know, you kind of saw a lot of the interesting panel layouts and extra designs on the side. He did a little bit of that. Sort of like Todd McFarlane had done a lot of when he was drawing this.
Yeah.
Around. Todd McFarlane drew this for a long time. He was the artist. It's actually issue 14 all the way up to 37.
Yeah.
So that's the majority of the run. Was Todd McFarlane actually?
You know what characters I did like that they revamped was the Our Man's Son.
Yep.
And Dr. Midnight. That was
cool. Dr. Midnight was cool, yeah. And so she was, ever since her first appearance, she was an on-again, off-again. She was always a member, but
yeah.
she spent most of her time being a doctor at a hospital yeah. and dressing up when...
And
when,
Yolanda, the Wildcat. Like,
the
I
Wildcat,
liked her.
Yeah. Yep.
Like
yeah,
in
so
the
those were all later editions.
In the Titans, you see Yolanda, I think, but she's controlling that... Beast, Wildebeest, or whatever.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, that's crazy. I remember all this shit.
You know.
Now that you talk about it, I remember a lot.
It was fun, and you know,
especially
some of
the Helix stuff, because the Helix really, you know, the Helix and Mr. Bones stood out for me a lot.
Well, Mr. Bones was, like I said, that was the example. It was so well done from his first appearance to the end of the book, where you feel like it was a whole like. Character arc, like a whole development of a character from beginning, yeah. you know, from one side to the other. It was just mm-hmm. really, really well done. Roy Thomas did a great job with that character.
All right. Well, on that note, I'm going to go continue my Memorial Day theme. And I read Jack Kirby's The Losers, 151 through 153. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on these. But this covers Sarge, Gunner, Johnny Cloud, a Native American fighter pilot, and Captain Storm, who had his own comic book, PT Boat Skipper Storm. So this formed the Losers, and it's Neil Gaiman wrote the intro to this. I'm actually reading the hardcover. I do not own these issues. I have every Jack Kirby collection, and I never read this before. Like I'm real well read into the Fourth World, and I never read in the the Newsboy Legion. Like I read all that stuff, but I never read his Losers. And Neil Gaiman wrote that he wasn't real thrilled about getting this assignment. So he got it and ran with it, and I could kind of see him not being as passionate about this as when he was creating stuff. Like these weren't his creations; he was running with them. They were created by Rob Kanigher. I mean, he created almost everything war, like him and Kubert. Anytime you talk about war books, you have to mention Kanigher, because he wrote mm-hmm. most of the stuff. He's really fascinating. And the first story, it was like they were thrown into a situation where they were under gunfire, and the underground French came and actually rescued them and showed them a tunnel, because they have a mission. It seems like they would get the missions. There was a World War II movie that just came out recently. I wish Barb was in here, because she hears me and then she tells me the name, like Fury or whatever. She's got the better memory as far as motion pictures. But there was one about paintings in World War II where the Nazis were going after famous paintings and the Americans were trying to get them too. It had John Goodman in there.
Oh, well, yeah. Monument Men.
Monument Men, yeah. Well, this first story reminded me of that. It's the Germans were going after a famous pianist, a piano player, and she was a female, but they didn't know what she looked like. And the Americans were trying to save her first. So the French led them to this tunnel to go find this pianist, and they got there, and one of them was captured immediately. I think it was Gunner. He was captured, and they had to come in there and actually rescue him. They were starting to beat him and say, "Tell us who the pianist is." You know, they were torching him, and they put up a lineup of all these women, and they said, "Pick who she is." And he I don't think he knew. So he didn't say nothing. But then they come crashing through the wall. They shoot him up. They defeat the Nazis. And it turns out the pianist was the maid working for the Nazis, and they didn't even know it. Until she start at the end, when they killed the Nazi that she was working for, she started to play the Valkyrie song. What is that famous? The Ride of the Valkyries.
Mm-hmm.
She started to play that on the piano, and he's looking up at the piano. He's like, "You were right in front of me the whole time." So that was the first story. The second story was them going on kind of like, you know, we're gonna go on leave. We're tired. We're exhausted. Let's go on our leave. And they go up to a town, and it's filled with Nazis, and they end up fighting a lot. And it looks like they're gonna get cornered just by sheer numbers. And then all of a sudden, a general comes in his jeep, and a bunch of Americans come and kill all the soldiers. And he comes out of his jeep, and he just starts yelling at these guys, like, almost for no reason. He's like, "You're a bunch of losers! No good for nothing!" And Jack Kirby's over the top with his machine gun fire when they're fighting. It's like crazy. It's like... I mean, he makes it really dynamic. So when they're actually in these fight scenes, you're like, wow, that's pretty cool. And then at the end, he actually draws, like, the machine guns from every... country that's fighting in World War II. So he got to draw them and describe them, like all the schematics and stuff of the guns. And in the next issue, he does a lot of the uniforms, which is pretty cool. But the last issue is it's a very strange one, and it's more Kirby-esque than any of the other stories. In other words, being larger than life and out there. The Nazis developed a big gun. It's called Big Max. And it basically, they just plant this gun somewhere, usually bring it over by train or some kind of vehicle. They shoot it over, and it just blows up a whole town. And then the infantry comes in, and then they attack all the soldiers and the people. So they have to defeat this thing, and the losers are working to defeat this Big Max. So they come up with a falsehood. One of the kids around there is reading comic books, and they're science fiction books. And they said, "Man, what if we trick the Germans to think we have a weapon, and we'll call it the Devastator? And it's really not a – it's just like a regular tank with regular guns." And it psychs them out, so they're able to destroy the Devastator just because the Germans think they actually have – they're going to be overpowered by this weapon that doesn't even have any weapons on it. But they draw it like a science fiction tank. And the guy who's drawing is the guy who reads the comic books. And he puts in a science fiction outfit. And all these Germans see it, and they, like, freak out just by the way it looks. And they're able to go in there afterwards. Because they're, like, in shock, and they don't know. They can't fire Big Macs because they're, like, in awe. The airstrike actually comes over Big Max and destroys it. So it's a pretty cool issue. But having a lot of fun with these, it makes me want to go down the rabbit hole again, you know, and you know how I am with my rabbit holes.
And how are you reading these again?
This is in a collected edition called Jack Kirby's The Losers. Me and Chris covered all the Fourth World books. And I had all the hardcovers for that. And then they have the Jack Kirby Superpowers collections.
Oh, sure.
Hardcovers, which collects all his, when he was doing the comics for the toys.
Yep.
And then there's several, like Newsboy Legion and other ones, too. A matter of fact, they're coming out with the second edition of the Newsboy Legion, I think, in this coming previews.
Oh, so, I think I saw that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those are the hardcovers. The paper is fucking amazing. I love this paper. It's newsprint. It's a really nice newsprint paper, and they actually used it in the Joe Kubert Presents books too, which was amazing. So I'd highly recommend this if you're a Jack Kirby fan and if you want to get into some World War II action.
Nice. Very cool.
Learn what inspired the movie, even though it wasn't anything to do with World War II. It's the Vertigo series, but...
I don't think they have much in common.
All right. You got anything else, Chris?
I'll mention one, but I'll be briefer about it. I read The Death of Superman. From 1961.
Oh, no, I don't know that.
Now you threw everybody off.
Yeah.
This is actually a story from Superman 149. And I don't have this issue. I read it in the Greatest Superman Stories Ever Told. And what page was it on? 182. Yeah, this is actually an imaginary story. Aren't they all? it tells you, which may actually never happen, but then again, may. And it's a three-part story. In the first part, Lex Luthor is in jail, and while working on the breaking rocks, he finds element Z in amidst the rocks that are being broken. And it's a substance which he thought existed. So then he requests to the warden that he be given access to the laboratory in the prison so that he can work on a cure for cancer using this element Z.
I can't see any harm in letting him access to that, do you?
No. And I mean, the warden says, all your life you've tried to crush and rule mankind with one mad invention after another. You'd have succeeded too, except for Superman. And what's hilarious is that as he's saying that, this is the warden of the prison, right? Uh-huh. He points and he's got a full figure picture of Superman on the wall.
Oh,
with like one of those lights that shine down on the picture, and it's got it's signed "Regards from Superman."
That's hilarious.
It's a pretty awesome warden.
Uh-huh.
But anyways, he might be able to cure cancer, so they end up letting him do it. There's a guard with a shotgun standing right next to him the whole time, and sure enough, Lex Luthor cures cancer. So Superman's pretty impressed. He wants to help out. He goes into outer space and he brings back this like enormous, huge rock of element Z. And then at Luther's parole hearing, he ends up vouching for Luther and ends up, Luther gets paroled. And then Luther and Superman become buddies. Like Luther wants to show him like this is legit. He takes him to his secret hideout. He's like, normally I wouldn't show you this, but I'm going to show you my lair. And Luther's got life-size statues of Attila the Hun, Genghis Khan, Captain Kidd, and Al Capone. Like, and he's like, you know what, Superman, you can destroy those because those are not my, those are not my heroes anymore. And part one ends with some like Metropolis gangsters telling Luther, man, we don't believe you. You better, if you don't kill Superman, we're going to kill you. But in chapter two, seems Luthor is legit. Like, Superman saves him from being shot by some of these gangsters, and he even gives Luthor his own signal watch, just like Jimmy Olsen has, so that he can save Luthor anytime these gangsters try to attack him. And but they keep trying to attack him, and so eventually Superman builds Luthor and satellite laboratory in outer space. You know, like you do.
Yeah.
And he flies Luthor up into the satellite so that he can work without interruption. And meanwhile, like, the gangsters in Metropolis are like, well, it's going to be a lot harder to kill Luthor now that he's in outer space, but we're still going to try. And so they, you know, send a missile to try to blow up the satellite. Again, Superman saves him. So after Superman saves him from this thing, he goes in and Luthor puts out a distress signal. And so meanwhile, like, Superman's done all these things to, like, make the satellite more and more impervious and stuff. And so he answers the distress signal. He goes in and he's like, what's wrong, Luthor? He's like, wrong. Nothing's wrong with me. I'm fine, but you're in super trouble. And he sets off a green kryptonite lamp and pins him down with the kryptonite rays. And he ties him to a stretcher and opens up, like, this window in the wall. And it turns out that Lois and Perry and Jimmy are there. He's kidnapped them so that they can be witness to him finally killing Superman. And he just continues to pour on the kryptonite rays. He, like, keeps turning it up and turning it up and mocking him. He even gets out, like, an x-ray so he can x-ray Superman's chest to make sure it's not a fake Superman. And then finally, like, he has a super stethoscope, and he uses it, confirms Superman is dead. This is written by Jerry Siegel and drawn by Kurt Swan, I forgot to say. And Kurt Swan, man, he really nails this one panel where Lex Luthor, he's got his fists in the air, and he's got the happiest freaking look on his face when he realizes that he finally killed Superman. So he takes the satellite down to Earth, and he just, like, tosses Superman's body out and says, you can have him now that he's dead. And he goes and he reveals to the Metropolis criminals that it was his plan all along. And in part three, they have the big funeral. They have him laid out, and you have all of the there's, like, the line outside the building to pay their respects is just thousands of people. And then you have, like, world leaders from around the world. You have even, like, aliens from out of space that he's helped that come to see him. You have Lois, you have Jimmy and Lori Lamaris and Perry, you have Lana Lang, you have Supergirl. She comes in disguise because the world at this point still doesn't know about Supergirl. You know, and it's funny, I know I'm reading this imaginary story, and I see all these, like, mourners, and I don't even care. And the only part that bothered me was, or that choked me up a little bit, was actually Crypto comes up, and they give Crypto a thought bubble, and he says, I will never know another master like you. Goodbye. When I think of all the adventures we had together. So, as it figures with me, it'd be the dog that made me sad. But some of the Legion of Superheroes, even, but then I laughed again because they show the Superman robots in the Fortress of Solitude paying their final respects to their, to, you know, the original Superman.
What do they look like? Just out of curiosity, the robots.
They just look like Superman. Just there's, like, four of them all standing in a row, and they're just, like, staring at a little TV screen. They even, like, you know, lower the flag and the bottle.
They have metallic faces or what? Like,
no, like,
they're fully formed.
You wouldn't even know that they were, like, they look just like Superman.
Oh, okay.
It's just the fact that there are four of them and that the caption tells you that they're robots. Otherwise, you wouldn't know. They're mourning in the battle city of Kandor. But then, you know, totally opposite this, like, Luther's having a huge party. He's, like, commissioned a painting that shows him, like, when he was hitting Superman with the kryptonite beam, and there's like a statue of Superman choking, and like all of these criminals are there and they're asking him, tell us more, you know, tell us more and more about like when you killed Superman, and they're cheering him and everything. All of a sudden Superman comes busting through the wall, starts smashing all these like offensive artworks and stuff. But it isn't Superman at all. She takes off the disguise, and it's, well, they don't even know that Supergirl exists, but it's Supergirl. And she introduces herself. She's like, I've been here. I've been Superman's secret weapon, but now I'm revealing myself, and I'm arresting you, Lex Luthor, in the name of Krypton for murder. And they shoot at her, but, you know, she's got the same powers as Superman. So she actually takes him, she shrinks herself and Luthor down. She actually takes him to the battle city of Kandor, and Lex Luthor is tried by the court in Kandor. And the crazy part is they actually, through a special hookup, they actually broadcast the trial in Kandor to TVs in America. But wrapping things up here, Luther is actually tried and found guilty, and he's still real smarmy. He thinks, oh, I'm gonna get out of this. He says, hey, I will turn your city back to its normal size. I'll reverse what Brainiac did, and you won't have to live in a bottle anymore. Just let me go. And he's like, yeah, they won't refuse. That's the thing that they've always wanted. But they're like, nope, we don't make deals with murderers. You're going to the Phantom Zone. And sure enough, they send him to the Phantom Zone. And, you know, because it's an imaginary story, Superman stays dead. But Supergirl has revealed herself, and I was happy to see that Krypto, now he hangs out with Supergirl, and the two of them, Krypto and Supergirl, are flying around. They fly past a big statue of Superman, and they think about how they'll miss him, but that they're going to carry on his work. And they tell you at the end, you know, let's not feel too badly. After all, this is only an imaginary story, and the chances are 1,000,000 to 1 it will never happen, you guys. Superman will not be killed for real, so you can all relax. So that was pretty...
Little did they know back then.
Yeah. Give them another 30 years of the comic industry shrinking. We'll see what happens. But man, Silver Age Superman is just so funny.
Good stuff.
So.
That's why I love Superman 3. It reminds me of that. It is so silver. I mean, it's like a tribute to Silver Age. It's so campy.
I've never seen it. I gotta watch it with that in mind.
Richard Pryor, man. I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's done in such like a. I know this story wasn't Kerry Bates, but in a Kerry Bates type Superman.
Mm-hmm.
I love Kerry Bates Superman. That's an interesting story.
Yeah, that was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, it's good.
Rob?
Hi, Mike.
Welcome to Geek Brunch Retrocast.
I'll talk about Superboy number 206 by Kerry Bates and Mike Grout.
what number was it?
206.
206.
It is Superboy starring the Legion of Superheroes.
Hey, I own this one. This is the first one. Yay!
Yeah. So, they had a bunch of, like, dollar bins at the con, and they had a lot of these. Either the Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes, Superboy starring the Legion of Superheroes, or just playing Legion of Superheroes. So I didn't get a lot. I got like four or five of them. And this one starts out with Clark, obviously a Superboy. He's having a nightmare and jumps up out of bed because he keeps seeing visions of Pharaoh Lad and Invisible Kid, who both previously had already passed away. So he wakes up the next morning and he's doing his patrol and he's like, all right, he's like, we got to demolish this building to build a new playground. This won't take more than a couple minutes. And all of a sudden, before he gets a chance to touch it, he sees this person like rolled up like in a cannonball pose, like if you're going to dive into a pool. But this guy's like bouncing right through this building and he collapses the whole thing. And Superman's like, or Superboy rather, it's like, oh, who can this be? Who's done this? Who's this mysterious replacement? And as the cloud of dust settles, he sees for a minute Pharaoh Lad, and then Pharaoh Lad flies up into the air. Superboy's too stunned to even try to pursue him. So he's like, oh my God, what's going on? Am I hallucinating? Is there something wrong with me? I know that Pharaoh Lad's dead. And the next day, he's walking to school, and they see that there's a skydiver that's been blown off course, and his chute didn't open. So he's just plummeting to his death, and Superboy thinks to himself, he's like, even if I have to reveal my secret identity, I'm going to go save him. Then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this skydiver stops falling, and he's just like invisibly carried to a roof. And when Clark uses his X-ray vision, he sees somebody holding him, and then everyone sees, as he becomes visible, that it was Invisible Lad. And they're like, wait a minute, how is this, or Invisible Kid rather, and Superboy's, this is crazy, both of them are dead, how is this possible? So then that night they both visit him in his secret room in his basement where he does his journals, and they're like, it's true, it's, you know, we're real, we came to visit you and stuff. And he's like, how is this possible? And it's like, well, we came back from the dead, but we can't explain yet. And then they have an alarm, and some strange robot has come up out of a swamp, and they start attacking it. But this robot gets Superboy trapped in like this energy, like almost like an energy circle around him that is just draining his power. And he's like, it's paralyzing me and I'm invulnerable. He's like, don't get close because it's going to kill you. And they're both like, well, don't you remember? We've already died. So if we need to sacrifice ourselves again, we'll do it. So Pharaoh Lad and Invisible Kid come up with a plan, and one kind of distracts the robot, and the other one destroys him. And so that's all set. They said, all right, well, thanks, Superboy. We're going to go back. We're going to take our time bubble and go back to our time. And they say, you know, thanks for meeting with us. Thanks for having faith in us. And they leave. And as soon as they get to the Legion headquarters, their time bubble explodes. And you see the feet of some other of the Legion. And they said, just as you predicted, Brainiac 5, Pharaoh Lad 2 and Invisible Kid 2 could only survive 48 hours. And it was a two-day lifespan. That's a flaw in their cloning process for duplicating Legionnaires. So they're in the business, apparently, of taking cells of all of the Legionnaires, including the live ones, and trying to clone them. So they can keep fighting villains. And they said, you know, someday we'll perfect the process and we'll be able to create a replacement for any Legionnaire who's died. And I kind of found that kind of disturbing, that they were creating these living, thinking people, knowing that they were going to die in 2 days. But, you know, this is an older story, so this stuff wasn't really addressed. So that was basically the gist of the story. So, yeah, kind of strange. They're like, yeah, we're just cloning people left and right, even though we know that they can only last for 48 hours. And we're going to keep trying until we can, you know, perfect this process. It was a little strange, but still fun. And then there was a backup Princess Projectra story, but it wasn't. I'm scrolling through. I don't even remember much about it. It wasn't very memorable. Just a quick 7-page story.
Who wrote the backup? Do you know?
Let me see. The backup also Carrie Bates and Mike Grell.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, man, Mike Grell.
Princess Projectra is just not one of my favorite Legionnaires.
I like her.
Yeah, she basically, the gist is she went back to her home planet, and her parents are the king and queen, and they were displaced by some, somebody that wanted to take over. And between her and, who's she with? I think it's Timberwolf. Timberwolf, yeah, they end up fighting back and getting the king and queen back.
A lot of soap opera drama in the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah, we've talked about
who's dating who.
Yeah, who's dating who? Absolutely.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, so that's about it. But it was I've always enjoyed the Legion of Superheroes. And so I like reading old stories that I've never picked up before.
Yeah. So my last one, I'm going to be really quick. It's What If number 14, volume 1. What if Sergeant Fury had fought World War II in outer space? So this one is the Watcher, and he's like, what if in a parallel world we have a Leonardo da Vinci advanced flying machines way early and technologies way early, and this world advanced. So World War II takes place in space, and there's two segments above Earth called the Alpha and the Beta segment or something like that, and the aliens are the villains, and they're invading. And Sergeant Fury and them are up on these space stations, and they're fighting via guns, and it does have Hogan and like a lot of them, Gabe, and some of them I didn't recognize. Like I'm not well versed in Sergeant Fury like I am in Sergeant Rock. Like I know Ice Cream Soldier and Bulldozer and everybody by heart, but I did recognize Gabe because he usually blows the horn for Sergeant Fury in the Howling Commandos, and he had this weird weapon where he blows into it and it shoots a laser. It's like, boom! And these aliens are invading, and they have somebody that's betraying them, and Harley's playing with her toys.
Harley!
Baron Strucker is the villain, and he's working with the Alliance here, and he feels that the Germans were betrayed, and he decides to team up with the aliens to defeat Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos. But it backfires on them. They find out about it. They send Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos after Baron Strucker. And one of the Howling Commandos is an awesome pilot, and he fights in space. And they're able to vector the aliens away. And that kind of how it ends. So it was an interesting story. The team on this, we talk about the writer quite a bit. Gary Friedrich did the plot, so he plotted the story, but Don Glut scripted it, and we had Herb Trimpe art, so you know, the art was really solid. I like Herb. I like his style. So that was it. Actually, what happened is I bought a full run of What If on an eBay auction.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
I bought the entire thing.
Nice.
And I was looking through them. I find it fascinating because Man, I'd say about 20% of the, maybe 25% of the titles have been exploited by Marvel in the universe itself. Like Jane Foster, Thor, what if Captain America became president? They kind of played with that. They played with what if the Avengers were around in 1950s, like Howard Chaykin did that miniseries. They've done so many things that have spawned out of what if.
It makes me wonder sometimes as if they're, you know, looking for ideas in one of their summits, if they just go through all of the what ifs and say, what can we actually make happen?
well, think about it. Number one. Jonathan Hickman played with putting Spider-Man in the Fantastic Four for Johnny Storm.
Right.
So you could go back and exploit some of these and say, holy crap, they've done most of these.
Yeah.
So you could probably read all of it, and then in the future they'll all come true.
Exactly. <continuity. laughs> Yeah. That's cool.
And that's all I have.
Yep, that's all that I have today too.
I just know I went down a World War II rabbit hole, and now I want more.
But that's cool. It was perfect timing for Memorial Day.
Daryl's pestering me now to go read Long Halloween, and I don't want to. I'm kicking and screaming all the way.
I'm telling you, once you start reading it, you're gonna be like, oh my god, I forgot
how to do this. I am not your alphabetical style reader.
It's not alphabetical. Just read it.
I worked on my degree having to do homework. I do not like to do homework. I like to do what I want.
Oh my god. Chris, will you read it to him?
Well, if Chris reads it to me tomorrow, I will be up for that.
Do I have to use the sexy voice again?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
And it has to be over Skype.
See that?
Video Skype.
I disconnected the camera on my laptop. Doesn't even work anymore. Too much trauma.
Use your phone.
Oh god damn it.
Yeah. You have FaceTime. Come on.
I was surprised when I was listening to a couple what was it? I think it must have been Collecting Valiant. With Dewan and who was it? James and I don't remember. Is it
Justin?
And apparently they must use the video portion of Skype as well.
Yeah.
And I never had heard of anyone.
I don't think they use Skype
for podcasts.
They use the same technology that Martin does, and I don't know what it is, but it's a video thing. It's on turn. Martin hates Skype, so he uses this, whatever it is.
Well, no. Well, when I do the Starman thing, it's Skype.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, but I was surprised that they could see what each other was doing and stuff. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, you could do video on this.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. I don't have a camera anywhere on this computer. Because I'm not using a laptop, I'm using a desktop.
So, Chris, set your alarm for, let's see, 5 a.m. because I usually get up at 3 a.m. and read me a Long Halloween.
Okay, I'll do it. Don't you worry, I'll be there.
Yep. Make sure you're up, Mike.
Yeah.
If he's a few minutes late, just keep waiting.
Don't worry about it. All right, well, you can reach Rob at Rob Krieger on the Twitters, and at MythMakingETC is Chris.
Yeah.
And his email is MythMakingETC@gmail.com. And I'm Mike Myers Brunch at ComicBookNoise.com. And I actually checked that email, believe it or not. Let's see. We're on GeekBrunchPodcast.com. And on Facebook, we're under the same name, Geek Brunch Podcast. You can follow the episode threads there. Click the like button, and then you'll be able to follow our episodes, what we publish. And you could also see Chris sometimes does his Kid to Flash on there, too. And also on his Myth Making ETC. Yeah. and see all my other podcasts, Mike M's Smorgasbord of Podcast plus Geek Brunch.
Lots of good stuff.
And I'll be at Heroes. So if you see me there, say hello. Me and Bill will be there.
When is
it's
Heroes?
In 3 weeks.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to the Niagara Falls. This is in Canada. The Niagara Falls Comic Con next Saturday.
Yeah, last time.
So this coming Saturday.
Last time, I think Bill and Chris shared a room, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bill's sharing a room with us this time.
Oh.
In the conference room.
Yeah, Bill and I hadn't ever met in person, and then we were sleeping together. I mean, in the same room.
And you had a single, too. And I was surprised you guys only wanted one set of towels. You were like, we'll share them.
Yep.
Well, and Mike and I heard you and Bill's podcast, you know, just recently where he met Martin and Nick for the first time. And, man, those guys got along quickly.
Oh, they did. Sexually.
Yeah.
Yeah. All they could talk about in Nerdy Legion was how great his body was and how
fit. It was a wonderland.
And now I just have to listen to that shit every episode that we're on now.
Yeah.
Bill Bomer thinks his body is a wonderland.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really blew his ego through the roof.
They sure did. And that's like you take a pretentious guy and you build their ego, and there's nothing worse.
It'll never end now.
Yeah. He's like, bow down before me and kiss my ring.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, you guys have a good Monday off.
Yes, you too. You're off, right?
You too.
I am.
Yeah, good. Good. Enjoy it.
Enjoy it. All
right, guys.
You guys have a good night because you got to get some sleep.
Yeah, I might
try to night.
Before
or
I
have
go to
a
bed.
Beer before bed.
I don't drink beer.
Well, you could drink tea.
Oh, you're talking. Maybe you're talking this to Chris. Chris drinks beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not before bed. That's a bad idea.
No.
Is it bad?
Maybe when I was younger. But
we talked to Keith yesterday, and he was sober on DC Noise, and the night before is when he drank. He drank like a 12-pack and then two bombers. Do you know what that is? Is that a big can? What is
I think it's that. I think that's that real big can. Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, Harley. I can't imagine drinking a 12-pack. Harlequin. She's really active. You ought to have seen her during one of your discussions. She was running back and forth like a mad dog, squeaking her toy. And I have to stay out of the way because I can't walk. You know how sometimes I tell you I pace?
Yeah.
She'll blow out my knee because she runs. She runs like 25 miles around the mile an hour around the table. And I've had my knee blown out by a pit bull before too, which was Scooter, one of our male dogs. I wasn't looking.
See?
I was out back. Torn.
You'd have to go to the hospital.
And, torn meniscus and. Whatever that other part is. I forget what.
Holy cow.
Yeah, and you'd go to the hospital and say it was a podcast.
No, I didn't go to the hospital, but I couldn't stand for like 2 days. I barely avoided surgery. Like, they were like, we could do surgery, but you could try to rehab it. And I was able to rehab it.
That's good.
Yeah. It just, it tore something that made your leg want to, like, if it turned a certain way, it would collapse, like fall, like it lost all its support. So I had to build the muscles around it to until it could heal.
Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy.
That's
but now
good.
I pay attention. I'm like, okay, I give it a
I
better.
Imagine that it's very easy to re-injure that the same way then, huh?
She has no brakes. She has no brakes. She has no concept of stop. I don't know if your dog could stop on a put the brake on if you tell her to stop, but Harley can't stop. Matter of fact, sometimes I'll come home and the couch will be moved, and I know she does her rampage. And I have these like heavy work shoes that I sometimes wear, and one time I left them out, and she got into them and tore them, so I leave them as toys for her. And they're heavy. They're about 5-pound shoes. and she carries around on her mouth and throws them around the house. And the weird thing is when she starts doing this, her pupils dilate. It's crazy. Like her eyeball just, like you look at her pupil and it's like three times as big as normal.
She's excited. Crazy.
We call her the crazy eyes.
Yeah.
Crazy eyes. The cuckoo eyes. It's either crazy eyes or cuckoo eyes.
It's probably right, some evolutionary thing to why that happens.
Yeah. It's weird though. We'll see like videos of other dogs that look like her, and they have very similar mannerisms, but none of our other pits did.
Yeah.
But we'll see like videos because we follow all their pages and stuff, and it's like, man, they go over backwards and just start growling, and they do all kinds of weird stuff, man. All right, well, you guys have a great evening.
Thanks. Okay. Everyone enjoy your day off tomorrow.
Yeah, have some sleep. I'll probably release this because it's kind of a Memorial Day before I release Geek Brunch, but we did talk about war comics, so I'd like to get them out appropriately.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. All right, I'll talk to you later. Bye.
All right, bye, guys.
Nighty-night.
Night.